Sakura, Sky, and Loki.
This week, gaming continues its new era pivot. Microsoft is ditching exclusivity. Nintendo is both mobile and big screen. And Sony officially ends its handheld gaming machine. We don't know where gaming will end up, but we'll explain where it is. This, along with the rest of the gaming news, starts right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Orange Lounge Radio.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, live tonight with episode number 766 for this March 3rd of 2019. My name is Rob Roberts, and joining me, as he does every week here on the show, is Techmaster Loki.
I'm here.
Hi, Loki. How are you doing?
I'm multitasking.
You are multitasking. We're having to kind of make some arrangements on the fly tonight. So not joining us tonight, unfortunately, is Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers. I do know this was supposed to be the first week that she was back with the show. Unfortunately, guys, I was just informed a couple hours ago there's been a death in her family. Unfortunately, her husband's stepdad, and they were close, passed away. So obviously a lot of our thoughts and well wishes to Dark Sakura, and I've let her know anything we can do to help, we will do. But, you know, sometimes in situations like these, you just need some time to stew, process, think, and do all of that. So that is exactly what we're going to let Dark Sakura do. So we'll hold down the fort with just myself and Loki tonight. And if she's ready to come back next week, then we'll be all ready for that. But joining us adjacent to the studio is Mr. Smush, making a ruckus of noise here. So I apologize if that gets picked up by the mic. He's just, I don't know why he's bonkers crazy tonight. Yes, he's fed. We take excellent care of him here. I think he just gets bored. I think he wants another cat. But I'm like, don't get me wrong, I want another cat. I just don't want to deal with all the landlord stuff that comes with having another cat. So, but soon, we'll figure all that out. Anyhow, you guys, of course, can join us live because we do tape live every Sunday night at the Voice of Geeks Network, VogNetwork.com, but broadcasting live on Twitch at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. We are on at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern every Sunday night right after our pal, the Bobby Black Wolf show, Bobby Black Wolf and his show. And yes, thank you guys in chat. I see all the love pouring out from our chat room. Definitely will pass that along to Miss Summers. Dartusia in chat says, sounds like my wife. She was thinking of getting another cat to keep hers company. I think it's the only thing that'll calm some cats down. And Mr. Smush is such a social cat that I'm sure he wants somebody else. But then you have to deal with the whole, you got to bring, you know, he's already, you know, when we rescued him, he was 3 years old. So now he's going on 4 years old. So he's kind of already, you know, at a certain age, it's kind of hard to mix cats together sometimes.
Yeah.
You have to make sure it's going to be a good fit. The whole reason we got Mr. Smush in the first place is that the person who originally rescued him, because somebody, the original owners, just left him outside, which is really tragic, obviously. But the original person who rescued him tried to bring him in, but the existing cat that she had was not having it. So, you know, it's kind of a big risk in that regard. It kind of helps if they're already together when they're littler. But anyway, I don't mean to turn it into a cat discussion show. After all, I just saw one of those shows on Netflix this past week. There's like
a cat discussion show.
No, it was like a cat like rescue show. It was like, it looked like it was Rescue 911 for cats.
Rescue cats.
I think that's what it was. Oh. Something like that. I don't know. It was something. It was definitely a British show.
Now, is it the cats rescuing people? Because no. That would be more interesting.
No.
Than
it was the people
rescuing cats.
Yes. Oh. I don't know what the actual. Somebody in chat will shout it out. But it was a show like all about cats. It was not. But there's also like a cat fashion show one or something like the cat. Like Best in Show, you remember that movie? Like a documentary on that stuff for cats, for real.
So it's like with cats, except they're trying to get them to do the obstacle course, and cats like, I'm not doing that.
But there's another one. There's another cat documentary that just hit Netflix as well. So what can you do?
Well, we finally picked up Hulu, so now I'm going through the entire series of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, because good choice.
Because
good
that's choice. Awesome. And yeah. Then I needed the same with South Park because I'm several seasons behind in South Park.
In fact, yeah, I'm feeling that tonight. Does your cat make too much noise? Anyways, that's my favorite episode of Always Sunny. No, actually, my favorite episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is the Night Man and the Day Man.
Yes.
Everybody knows that episode if you've ever seen. That's the best one. But anyway, we could be a TV discussion show, I suppose, but we're actually here to talk about video games.
It's gaming culture.
It is gaming culture.
If
Always Sunny.
Listen, they have all of these shows have memorabilia in GameStop. GameStop is a game store. Therefore, this is perfectly fine.
Okay, fine. All right. But let's get into the kickoff topic tonight, which is a little bit depressing. It's one of those things we've kind of been talking about for a little while. We knew it was coming, but official this week. Officially done this week, right, Loki?
Sure, it's officially done. The Vita, it's no more. They were down to, like, I think last week when we reported on, they were down to two of the SKUs that were still available, and now those are done. So the Vita is no longer being sold by Sony any longer, and they have no plans for another portable system as of yet that we're aware of. So I bet you anything, if Switch does really well, everybody likes to copy Nintendo, so we'll see.
What do you think, and I'm going to open this up to our chatters as well in our Twitch TV chat room at VOG Network. What do you guys think were the good moments of the PlayStation Vita and the bad moments of the PlayStation Vita? Like, why it's not continuing when the 3DS still has game releases coming out in the coming months with the Luigi's Mansion and all that. What were the good things about the Vita? Because we're not going to be one of those podcasts that's only negative about games. So what were the good things? And then what were the not-so-good things that Sony could have done better? I open this to chat, too.
The good things were, I would say, the hardware was nice. I mean, it was a nice system altogether. They tried to pull, like, that back tap thing, which was not... That wasn't working out. I think some of the games that they had released on it were really nice. I mean, it was good. It's a powerful system as far as being able to play PlayStation 1 games, PSP games, the PlayStation Mobile stuff, the indies. They had the Vita TV, which was also, it was cool, but no one really picked it up. I don't know. I mean, I think it was a pretty decent system.
Yeah. I think the Vita was a really nice piece of hardware. Like, it really was. It was a solid system. It was good to look at. Very beautiful screen. Great for, like, watching Netflix and things like that.
And they did some cool things, like, originally with it, but I don't know if it, like, because I sold my Vita pretty quickly. I had picked one up at one time, and then I was like, I'm just not playing this. And so I ended up selling it for something. I don't remember what it was. I just ended up getting rid of it. And like, one of the things I remember it doing was, like, kind of, like, showing you players that were nearby, like, locally. Like, it would just say, hey, this person's interested in this, or you can, like, exchange things between people. It was almost like kind of a spot pass for 3DS, but not quite. I don't really know how to describe it.
And I think that while you're on that, that was one of the big negatives on the PlayStation Vita for me, was that things like that didn't make sense. Sony never did a really good job explaining some of these features and why some of these features were needed. And I think the biggest example of that, Loki, was 3G. Do you remember that the PlayStation Vita had 3G? So here was PlayStation Vita 3G. Does 3G allow you to play multiplayer over a cell phone connection? No, it does not. Okay, so what does it do? And I don't think there was ever, like, a real... No, your stream did not just die. I don't think there was ever a real answer.
No, it didn't really do anything.
3G.
It was just... It was too...
Doesn't that scream missed opportunity?
Yeah.
Like, there should have been a Sony-developed game that was capable of playing over 3G. And I realized maybe because of the unreliability of the cell networks or whatever, maybe like a first-person shooter type of game at the time would not have been.
No. You remember, there are some games that allowed you to play over 3G. And this is where the whole asynchronous multiplayer bullshit came into play.
Okay, what? Because I'm forgetting.
It's like taking turns or ghost data or some shit like that.
Well, I was going to say, like a card game or a board game. Eye of Judgment for Vita would have been great. Because it would
have... Had Eye of Judgment for Vita.
Maybe I want to correct the record. But you know what I mean? Like, those types of games, like, as much as you say, you know, the AA secret, you know, if they had maybe marketed that a little more, you know, because Nintendo has a way of being able to market those kinds of games and make you understand why you need them, like Clubhouse games. Can you imagine if Nintendo's Clubhouse games was, like, a Vita?
And it also had, I think, a front and rear camera on the thing, too, which...
It did. Which also never really made sense.
But they have that on the DS and stuff as well, so that didn't make any sense. I don't know. There's just a lot of tech in there that, like the back touch sensor, I never understood the need for that. Aside from there's a couple games that use it, but it's kind of gimmicky.
Some Sony things are hit and miss sometimes. Like, Six Axis didn't end up being a thing. But DualShock, like, now you can't imagine life
without. Well, the tilt sensor stuff, they still use that in some games. A lot of people don't really care for it, but they use it sometimes.
Let's get some comments from chat over at VOG Network over on Twitch. YYR comments, I still own the 3G Vita, and if it could have been used as a phone, I would still be using it as my smartphone. It was my first portable internet-enabled device. I used it for Twitter, Foursquare, and web browsing. So, I mean, yes, it could do all those things, but, you know, Sony never really, at least in this country, you know, it's hard for me to speak
to Japan. Really think that they could come out with a new portable system.
I think so too. I think Sony should try again.
Actually, like, just, you know, get a decent, you know, cell processor in there so you can actually do, like, you know, 4G, you know, calling and data or whatever.
I think if Sony were to try this again, though, I think one thing I would really want to advise them to do is don't have a 1-year plan. Do not have a 1-year plan on what this console is going to do.
Oh, that's the other thing.
Have a 3-year plan, because it feels like Sony, like, completely abandoned.
No. I remember now the 3G thing too. About that, you were locked with AT&T, and they had cell phone plans with that as well, and they were expensive.
Yes, but I'm not going to fault Sony as hard for that, because iPhone was in the first situation. Remember, iPhone was AT&T exclusive for the longest time, and it still managed to be okay. So, I mean, that's something that could have grown as time went on. Maybe they had an agreement where AT&T was going to push the Vita in their own stores, and that's why they signed on to it. That's why these companies make those types of agreements sometimes. Just like why an indie game would sign on to PlayStation exclusive in the first place, because a game like No Man's Sky, because Sony was going to help them market and help push them for better or for worse than that particular.
And it was also a great device for remote play as well.
Yeah.
You know, they used to do that pretty well.
Yeah, and I just feel like this device is capable of so much more than Sony really ever did a good job of communicating or really had the faith in pushing forward with their first-party games. Because, you know, again, one thing Nintendo always does well is that they really sell it with their first-party games.
They kind of – I know some of the games that they put out on it were pretty good, but, like, the ones you –
And that was it.
Were supposed to be really good, like Killzone or I think they had a Call of Duty game on there – they were, like, outsourced to third parties to do that. I'm not even saying, like, the Call of Duty one was outsourced to the normal, like, Call of Duty teams. It was, like, outsourced to some smaller company to put these games together, and they weren't that great. And that was kind of the problem. It's like these big games that you really want to draw people in for, they just didn't really have them.
Going to chat for some more comments. Kaijudo disagrees and says, no, Sony, don't do another portable. PSVR. Work on getting a flippin' theater app for PSVR. As G100 Matt says, I'm with Kaijudo, actually. They should never do another handheld and just focus more on PSVR.
And
interesting.
Storage. Their proprietary memory cards.
Yeah, that was a choice. That was probably a bad call. Let's see. And then what was that? YYR also said in chat, anyone releasing a dedicated portable at this point is suicidal. Interesting.
I don't think that's necessarily true.
I mean, is it because phones – I'd like to kind of dissect that comment a little bit. Is it because phones are more and more becoming like that's the only device you need and it plays games? Because are tablets even selling like – because I would say, but tablets. People are still buying tablets. But are they? Because iPads, like, you don't hear about those.
Well, iPads are expensive. The iPads, they're trying to sell those as like almost like computer laptop replacements or something like that.
Okay, but Android tablets too. I don't really hear about those selling like they did 5 years ago.
Right. I don't think necessarily because, you know, a lot of people still have their tablets from 5 years ago. That's the problem. With a tablet like that, you don't really need to. Like, my kids have cheap-ass tablets. I mean, they were like $70 tablets that they have, and they're just fine. I mean, those things can't do shit. They can't play anything. I mean, they can play some things. They can play Minecraft and Roblox, but they can't play shit. I mean, so granted, we could upgrade to a better tablet, or, you know, for less money than buying an Android tablet, we can buy a Nintendo Switch or a 3DS, you know, or something like that.
Do you think the answer is for PlayStation 5 to look like a Nintendo Switch, where you can play it on your TV and it's portable?
Well, that would certainly help me in the situations where I don't have access to my TV. I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah, it would be a little weird to see Sony and Microsoft like go.
Let's just go full on bizarre. Let's just do it's all AR. It's just an AR headset to play that shit.
I think it would be smarter for these companies to adapt Switch like technology and something that could beam to your cell phones. Like you could play like on your iPhone, you know, they just or Android, whatever, both devices. There's just an app that allows you to do the remote play on your app. Although, granted, like, obviously, I don't think PlayStation games would play very well on a touch-only screen as well. Like, you really need a controller. But maybe there's some things you could do through your, you know, box PlayStation 5 or Xbox Next, whatever it is, that, you know, you could beam over to your iPhone.
I just think they should stop introducing new tech or new, like, not necessarily new tech, new gimmicks to the hardware, like new control schemes and stuff like that, unless they have some good uses for it. Like, don't, you know, even with like the 3D stuff, the 3D stuff with the 3DS is pretty awesome, but no one ended up using it. It was kind of a gimmick. And it wasn't really a gimmick. It was because of the stupid health warnings, because they're like, oh, it's going to hurt people's eyes. The young children are going to go blind. And then it's that bullshit that fucking ruined the 3D stuff. That's what it was, is that bullshit. Otherwise, it would have been cool. And then the rear touch thing. To have a front touch and rear touch on it, that's a little stupid. I get the front touch screen. The rear touch, is that's just a fucking gimmick.
A little bit. It just maybe they just didn't have the game that really sold you on the concept. Because I can understand, and somebody in chat had said it, I'm sorry, I forget who, but that like when you're using front touch, your fingers are getting in the way of the screen. When you're using back touch, you can still see the entire screen and yet, you know, be using your fingers in the back. I just don't think they really had the game to really show that strongly. Again, you would think that Sony would develop that game, but Sony and Nintendo don't really design games the same way and are able to show off the hardware. And I think that's one big place where Sony Vita, you know, kind of didn't do as well here. But then again, you know, one thing we have to remember in Japan, this is a very different story. The Vita continued to do well over there for quite some time, still being supported. I think even still today, there's still some Vita games coming out, but it's gonna dry up pretty quick now.
But why is that?
I don't know.
Is it because
Maybe they explained it better there.
A lot of their population is using mass transit, so like portable devices are more popular.
Sure.
Or the fact that a home theater setup might be a little bit more rare because of spacing issues. I don't know what the case may be, but whatever that was, the messaging wasn't over here. I don't think they really pushed it that hard over here either.
I think you're more onto something with the fact that there's a bigger market for portable gaming in Japan because, you know, everything, you know, people can more walk to a point or they take mass transit. It's not, you know, quite the same culture 100% as it is here from getting from point A to point B for many people.
I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, let's see. And YYR says in our chat, Japanese developers supported the Vita much, much better. And that's another thing that it kind of comes down to is that, you know, those types of games that we don't see as much of here, like visual novels and, you know, those sorts of things, those continue to have a strong life on the Vita. And, you know, those types of games just don't really have the same market here as they do in Japan. Let's see. And YYR says, if you look at the games released in North America for Vita over the last few years, it's indies and Japanese games. And that's pretty much all that's been carrying the Vita for a while is those Japanese games do get translated and indies because, you know what, if I'm not mistaken, Unity had like a Vita output type of feature.
I think so.
So, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, as long as the door's been open for indies to be able to publish their stuff on Vita, of course they're going to keep doing it. Because, you know, if I'm an indie developer, I just want to get my game out there to as many places as possible. And so the Vita has always kind of been, I think, an attractive, you know, option.
Yeah.
So, for sure. Let's see. Sia Tabiri pointing out that also the mini disc had a huge life in Japan. So, you know, some things just sometimes not always explainably do better over there than they do over here for whatever reason. Let's see. Kaijudo saying the Vita doesn't have an R3 or L3, so the back touch was needed. That kind of took the place of the clicking, the analog.
Well, it doesn't have an R2. R2. It's R2, L2. It did have the clicking on the controllers.
And I think you tap the top for one and the bottom for another. Like, I think
you couldn't push in the... Oh, maybe you couldn't push in the analog.
I don't know.
It's been a long time.
I think you tap the top for two and the bottom for three or something like that. I think that's how it worked. It's been a little bit, obviously, but if you were doing remote play, you kind of had to do that. That would stand in for some of those buttons that was missing on the Vita otherwise versus a PlayStation 4.
I'm just surprised that they didn't push the Vita TV or even like rebrand the... I mean, honestly, like the Vita TV, they could have pushed that with...
I think that was a huge mistake.
Like a PlayStation Classic, because the PlayStation Classic is like $99.99. Just throw in a fucking DualShock in the PlayStation TV, and like change up how they store, maybe USB storage or something to it, and you have a solid device that can not only play PlayStation Classic games, but oh hey, look, there's this library of Vita titles.
Hugely missed opportunity. They should have just rebranded the Vita TV as a PlayStation Classic. Loaded it with 20 pre-done games and then sold it for $99.99. I think that was a huge missed opportunity. Granted, it could have come a year sooner because I think the Vita was already on its way out the door by the time the actual PlayStation Classic got out the door. Speaking of PlayStation Classic, I want to make sure I get this comment from Bobby, who says, as far as the Vita, it was my Suikoden and Final Fantasy PlayStation 1 machine. It made a great PlayStation Classic. So, and it made a great PSP. Player too, because you could download things that as long as you bought it digitally on PSP, you could download it on Vita as well. Or, you know, they did sales and things like that. So, like, I remember my Vita had that Final Fantasy IV remake they did on PSP that's great. Like, that version doesn't exist anywhere else but the PSP because they went the 3D route when they did it for the DS, and then they made that version the one that they sold on Steam and PC and all the other places, on tablets and stuff. So, like, that 2D remake of Final Fantasy IV, which includes the after-years stuff, too, that's only on PSP and Vita, thanks to the PSP compatibility. So, yeah. What a bummer.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well... You know, just some memories of the Vita. I just think if they'd just done a couple other things differently, it might have gone a lot further. And it'll always kind of baffle the mind why they didn't maybe just try to put a little more in it. I don't know if it would have ever outsold the 3DS, but I think, you know, the Vita could have been a bigger brand than it was. And I think that example of the PlayStation Classic piggybacking on existing Vita technology is a great example.
Which is why I think with the technology being where it is, I don't think it's impossible for them to come out with another handheld device. I mean... I don't know. They may not do that, though. They don't want to take risks.
YYR in chat says, the other reason PlayStation TV was a failure, where were the streaming apps? No Netflix was a huge blow. And SSG100 Matt with a very interesting comment that follows that up. They were too busy trying to develop the Vue at the time, and PlayStation Vue does very, very well still. Interesting thought on that is that maybe Sony's desire, because by the nature, Sony is not just a gaming company. We know that, right? Sony is a TV building company. They are a movie making studio, Sony Pictures, right? Sony does a lot more than games, and maybe sometimes the desire to keep everything Sony, Sony, Sony maybe works against them in some of these places.
Yes.
Which, that's a very, very fair thought, is that maybe they didn't want to do Netflix or Hulu because Sony was trying to push their own thing, and that it ended up working so well because that's not always what the market wants. Sometimes it works in their favor. Blu-ray worked out for them. Beta versus VHS didn't work out so well for them, right? Because they were the beta team. Wasn't Sony the beta
team? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And I think beta was still used in broadcast news for a long time, but that's about, you know, even now that's all digital. Now beta and VHS are long gone, but that brief period of time when I was interning at a news station, they were using beta tapes for sure. So, but that's a very niche thing. So, anyway, let's see. A couple other comments in chat, and then we're going to move on to our gaming weeks here. Let's see. Bobby Blackwell says, Vita had a YouTube app, but took it offline when YouTube upped the API. Interesting. And YYR says, I feel like it was missing a lot of popular video apps. Pod Culture saying, Vita did have a Netflix app. So, and maybe it was took a little time to come out. But you know what else doesn't have a Netflix app and seems to be doing very well for itself? The Switch. Still no Netflix app on the Switch. It has Hulu, but no Netflix, and still seems to be doing okay. But of course, obviously, you can't really one for one the Switch and the Vita because it's just different stuff. The whole fact that you can take it with you, you know, it's a console and a portable, and just the fact that Nintendo making the strong first party libraries that you can only play, you know, you can only play Breath of the Wild on a Nintendo product. I'll, because technically you could play it on the Wii U, but we know most people are playing it on the Switch, right? You can only play Mario Kart 8 and Mario Maker and stuff on a Nintendo product. You can't
officially.
Yes, officially, of course. All right. Anyway. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about what we've been doing with our gaming weeks. Maybe we've been playing the Vita, or maybe not. How was your gaming week, Loki? What have you been playing this week?
I haven't played much of anything, to be honest. I played a little bit of Pokemon Go this week. I haven't really been playing any games this week. I've been trying to get back into programming again, so I was going through like one course online just to kind of a code log thing, and then I got bored with it really fast because it was just too basic stuff. I really had to skip ahead on it, and I was like, nah, you know, I'm not going to waste my time on this. I'm just going to do something else. So that's what I'm going to do, is I'm doing something else. But I was messing with that for a while, and then what else did I play? I played I downloaded the Lego Movie 2 game, which is actually, it's very different than the other Lego games that they have out right now. It's more like open world. It kind of similar to like Lego Worlds versus any of the other Lego games. So I haven't gotten a chance to dive into too much of that because my kid's been hogging the Switch. He was playing Lego Movie 2, and then he got bored of that too, or got frustrated with it, I should say, and he's been still playing through Lego Incredibles. So been doing that. Haven't played any DDR this week. I've been really bad about that. The problem is at work, I've been so busy, I've been skipping lunches. And so I'm under my calorie count just without the exercise. And also this week has been crazy with the rain and everything. So I've been under my calories exercise-wise and or without exercise. And then when I come home, I end up having to cook or do something. And so all my time is like gone at that point. So I haven't played any DDR this week, unfortunately, but I've been meaning to get back to it. I just, eventually it'll happen. And what else? I did play a little bit of Crackdown 3. Just still grinding out the last few bits of my skill points I need. And then, yeah, that's pretty much it for right now. I mean, I'm hopefully getting to maybe Kingdom Hearts 3 at some point. Or I'll just completely forget about the game. You know, that may happen too.
Don't do that. I mean, you still got a good, 12 years until they do another
one.
Well,
it's, you know, Final Fantasy 15, too. I still haven't even...
Oh, my God. Get on that.
...begun,
it's a fun
like,
game.
Most of that. So, I don't know.
All right. Let's see. My gaming week. So, I'll kind of follow up your, like, calorie chat and what to do when it's raining and stuff, because I've actually found this week I kind of got sucked into PlayStation VR, which I think you'll be happy with, you know, because I, for whatever reason, just I was kind of waiting for that killer app that I wanted on VR, and now I've been playing more and more Beat Saber on PlayStation VR. I did a little stream on Tuesday where I was playing it, and one thing that I've noticed as I've been playing more Beat Saber is that I'm actually getting, like, exercise, and I'm burning calories, and it's counting on my watch for all the, you know, calories burned. My heart rate is getting up. I'm hurting my back like crazy because I'm probably not stretching properly before I play. And I don't know if it's something about the motion of you know, swiping when you play Beat Saber or whatever. But, you know, it's been a good workout. So that's been something to do when it's been raining to still get a little bit of exercise. So I've been playing more PlayStation VR. Beat Saber specifically, I'm up to, I think I've cleared 3 expert level songs now. So it's kind of like, wow, I'm progressing in a music game that I have a lot of enthusiasm about. I haven't felt this since, like, back when I played DDR regularly, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe like Rock Band. I don't know. When I played Rock Band pretty hard, I think I there was a lot of stuff in those games I really wanted to clear out. But, yeah, it's been nice to get up and moving. Another kind of, like, exercise-related game, I actually put, like, a question on my Twitter. I was like, hey, what other types of, like, exercise games or what other VR games give you a really good workout? Because I'm really loving this idea that, like, I'm playing, you know, Beat Saber and I'm getting – and don't say Just Dance. Give me, like, some games I haven't heard of. So somebody on Twitter recommended to me I play a game called Sprint Vector. So I downloaded that as well, and I've been playing that a little bit. And that one's really interesting too because you it's like a racing game. But not with cars. You're like, I guess I would compare it to like skiing It's kind of like, or like rollerblading. It's kind of like what you're doing in that game, like futuristic. But like what you do is you use, like you're holding the controllers and you do this motion like left, right, and like alternating. Like imagine like you're kind of like skiing or something.
Yeah.
You're on like a Stairmaster or something where you're going back and forth with the different move controllers. And that's kind of how you control the character. And then which way you look kind of depends on which way you drive. And you can get a really cool, like, you can hit both center buttons to, like, jump, and it's a really kind of cool sensation in VR. And, yeah, I've been enjoying that. I ran into a few issues, especially, and you could see this when I was live streaming, a cheap plug for my personal channel, Rob Roberts. When I was doing my personal stream earlier this week, one problem I was running into is, like, I thought I was going the wrong direction on the course because all these arrows showed up saying, hey, idiot, go this way. And it took me a little bit to figure out what the reason why that error was showing up is because I turned to the right. So I'd started to look this way because I was going this way. But what was happening is that the camera couldn't see the VR headset anymore. So it was saying, you need to turn and look at the camera so I can see which way you're going. Because I should have been using the quick turn buttons to actually do the turn.
Mm-hmm.
So my only complaint about Sprint Vector is I don't think that mixing of the real turning with your head and the quick turning, I don't think that works as well as the developers intended. It wasn't as intuitive. And the fact that it took me a long time to figure out, why is the game yelling at me? Like, it should have said out of camera range, or it should have had some type of error or something that came up to tell me, and I would have figured that out a lot faster. So I feel like that was one place where I was like, ooh, this Sprint Vector could have, maybe the tutorials could have been a little better in the beginning to tell me about that type of stuff. In all fairness, I did not play as far as the intermediate tutorials, but I kind of felt like I didn't need to beat the first couple courses. If I need to go that far in tutorials, then maybe the tutorials are too long, and that's something else that should be. Because the tutorials I did do were kind of, but it takes a little bit to explain. Like, you have to, like, it's like push the button, then release, and, you know, I got it, but obviously I was still having problems. So, but otherwise, that little complaint aside, I do enjoy the, like, I think that like, idea of how to control it is a great idea for, like, an exercise-type game, and it feels, like, great to play. I love the sensation of, like, jumping and coasting, and there are some levels where you, like, fall down a hole, and it's kind of like, whoa, like, it almost kind of makes you, like, you know, if you're a motion-sick type of person, you ain't going to have a good time playing it, but, you know, if you're able to stomach it, okay, I think it's a lot of fun, actually. So, again, that's Sprint Vectors. That's another VR game I checked out this week. Other games I've been playing, I've been continuing my adventures in Phantasy Star Online. If you, again, have been watching my personal
channel.
One? Yeah, the original, Blueburst. Okay. Been playing on a private server that exists out there, and it's very, just go to Google, y'all. You'll probably find the same one we're playing on. But, you know, Sega doesn't really care about Blueburst anymore. You know, they...
So is Blueburst the same as, like, the Dreamcast?
Pretty much, except it has Episode 4.
Oh, okay.
And it was the PC one. When they
released... I thought it was a sequel or something.
No, it's PSO Blueburst is just the PC version of PSO. And it was the last version they put out, I think. It was after GameCube, for sure. I know that. And probably Xbox as well. So that's where the private servers are. So my buddy Delvin over at VG Realness.
Yeah, I see them. I see the notifications every time you stream there. Yeah,
yeah. Well, because it's been a few times. We were streaming last week, and then we did a couple nights this week, and that's been fun because he's been like, "Oh no, you're gonna beat this game. You never beat games. You're beating this." So we've been having a good time just getting through the story, and it's good because, you know, it's not a very complicated game. So it's fun to just sit there and be adventuring together and just talk about other stuff. And that's what usually happens, is that thanks to chat, thanks to other people that will randomly join the stream. Like, Bobby was with us one night. Shane was on Discord with us one night. And so we would just talk about other random stuff. And I think it makes for great streams. I don't. Hopefully you guys agree. But for those of you that have watched, hopefully you guys have been enjoying those streams. Because it's not even, like, just about PSO, but just, you know, having fun. Kicking back and playing a game and talking a little smack. So, yeah. That's been a big part of my week as well. And then I'm trying to think. I've still been playing a little bit of World of Warcraft, Final Fantasy 14 as well. I had to log in to save my house. Otherwise, I can't think of a lot of, like, new stuff I've really been playing. I did do the new raid boss in Pokemon Go, since you brought that up. I did that. And I was on a field day in Pokemon Go the other day. What's really funny is that one of my longtime Pokemon Go playing friends just got into Ingress finally after all these years and started playing that. And, like, right at that same time, I was like, I want to play more Pokemon Go and get more gold gym badges because I've been ignoring the gym game in that game for so long outside of raids. And like, as far as Ingress goes, and I mentioned this on a previous episode, I'm really bored. The day-to-day game in Ingress hasn't changed in like 4 years, despite the Prime client. So I'm kind of like just bored of it because, you know, again,
yeah.
How do you defeat that which has no life? And that's what it boils down to. But the live events are a lot of fun, so I still do the live events. But that's kind of it for me of that game right now. So anyway, that's pretty much it. That's what I've been playing with my gaming weeks. So I guess we'll move on.
Yes.
A little bit of housekeeping tonight. Dark Sakura, as I mentioned, she's not here tonight because she had a family emergency, and we do hope the best for her and Dan. But please bear with us a little bit because since we did just find that out a couple hours ago, everything was planned for there to be three hosts tonight, and now there are two. So if things feel a little bit disorganized, sorry about that, but we're trying to fix things on the go. That being said, follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/OLR. Also, we would appreciate follows at our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VOGNetwork is where you can find us on Sunday nights. And we really appreciate, again, those of you that have been given the biddies and the subscriptions as well to see the video on demand. Been very, very flattered and thankful to those of you that have been contributing in that form. Thank you so much. Let's get to some news. Loki, why don't you start us off with some gaming news?
Yes, so apparently there is going to be Kingdom Hearts 3 DLC because, you know, they're a company and they have to make a lot of money and they need to make more money than just selling the game. So how else to do that? Well, you develop DLC for it. So it's going to be a mix of kind of free and paid DLC. I'm not really sure exactly what's going to be available, but they said, you know, they're going to add some free DLC over time and a paid DLC with several elements in one batch. And this is according to an article in Dengeki Online, where Tetsuya Nomura was talking about the DLC and whether there's going to be a re-released final mix edition and how they're going to do that. But so I guess we'll wait and see what they add to it. Maybe new worlds. Maybe more Cup Noodle sponsorship. Who knows?
A new world would be quite the undertaking. I would see maybe a lot of people have been asking where are the Final Fantasy characters in Kingdom Hearts 3. Mm. I mean, yes, the Moogles are there, but like as far as like you remember in the original Kingdom Hearts games, you had like, you know,
Cloud
was there and I don't know why they didn't call him Squall. They called him Leon. Aerith was there and yeah, they changed his name for whatever reason. It does play into the Final Fantasy VIII story, but it is weird that we called him Squall there. And anyway, and then Sephiroth. Remember Lance Bass as Sephiroth in the original Kingdom Hearts? That's missing from Kingdom Hearts 3 as well. So you would think it would be a little bit easier maybe for Square to develop on a Final Fantasy theme story than maybe having to go back to the table with Disney and negotiate for whatever else. Although I would think if I was Disney and I had a new movie coming out that I really wanted to promote, maybe I would allow a new world to be made for it. But then again, what's the big Disney movie this winter? It's Frozen.
Live action remake world.
Oh, there is that. But I was thinking Frozen 2 was the big thing they were pushing this holiday.
Yeah.
But we already had Frozen, so I don't know if it really makes sense.
But it's live action remake world where it's the same as the old worlds. It's just done with live actors now.
That's right, because we're getting Lion King this year. Is Aladdin this year too? Or is Aladdin next year?
Yeah, I think Aladdin's this year.
Wow, okay. And then isn't there another one too this year? I know Little Mermaid is something they're talking about. Cause didn't they already cast Zendaya for Ariel? Or am I crazy on that?
Fuck if I remember.
I don't know. But anyway, I think that's something. Yeah, but the Little Mermaid is probably next year. But yeah, there's revisiting all the
running
90s
out of
classics.
Ideas. Remake all the.
Hey,
see,
if we're reviving 90s ideas, how about Kingdom Hearts goes to the 90s Lion King game from the Genesis? How about that?
How about Kingdom Hearts goes to the 90s Disney afternoon lineup?
Oh, like gummy bears and stuff?
Like gummy bears, Darkwing Duck.
There's the gummy ship.
Yeah, there you go. Darkwing Duck, DuckTales. Hell, even the new DuckTales is pretty good.
Okay, act deft with all the receipts in chat. Aladdin is May. Lion King is July. Dumbo is this month. I knew there was another one. Dumbo is happening too. Yeah. Anyway, let's see.
At least that one is like, you know, it's Tim Burton, so it's a little bit different.
A Marvel idea, of course. This J100 Matt says, how long will DLC take, though? They will be deep into Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 4 when it finally comes out, but certainly the Marvel But again, that's all going to be agreements and signing. And does Marvel want to be involved in a Kingdom Hearts world when we know that there is a secret Marvel game project being worked on over at Tomb Raider, Crystal Dynamics, right? Crystal Dynamics, who did Tomb Raiders, doing that game, didn't they? Yeah, so they're developing that game. And you would think, based on the Tomb Raider reboot, that this Marvel game they're doing is probably going to be a more gritty, realistic type of game. That, I mean, we don't know. We're just guessing based on, you know, what Tomb Raider looked like. Would they want to be in Kingdom Hearts at the same time? Maybe not. I don't know. Let's see. ActDef pointing out that Scrooge McDuck does appear in Kingdom Hearts 3. That's right. He's the owner of the cafe, right, where Ratatouille cooks all the dishes.
I haven't played the game, so I don't know.
Well, you should get on that. All right. and then see a Tiberian chat suggest things like Lizzie McGuire and That's So Raven. There you go. I mean, Raven Simonier is only, what, like in her 40s now, so it'd be really funny to see her come back and play
or
that.
Like they could do, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of things that they could do. Yeah, none of which are good, but, you know.
We'll see. Let's see. Oh, sorry. Excuse me, ActDeft is saying at the top of his lungs in chat, Remy. The name of the rat is Remy. Sorry. That's one of the few Pixar movies I actually didn't see.
I have not seen Ratatouille as well.
I haven't either. It's just the one I missed. So it happens.
That and Brave. I haven't seen that or Brave.
But Bobby, in our defense, saying the game does never name him. He's just the chef. They never give him a name. He's just the chef. I thought that was the case, that they just give him a very vague name. Anyway, all right, let's move on to some more news. Some big announcements this week out of Nintendo as they have unveiled Pokemon Generation 8, Pokemon Sword, and Pokemon Shield is the new Pokemon 8th generation of games, as they announced in a very brief 7-minute Nintendo Direct this week. Not Pokemon Gun, as some magazines in other countries have picked up and run with what the Twitterverse has done, or there was a whole lot of parodies that were shown on our Vogue Network Discord at VogueNetwork.com/Discord. Somebody posted a
journalism. What's that?
I know, right? My favorite that I saw on Facebook was Pokemon Chonkla, where the,
I saw Pokemon Trebuchet.
Okay. Right, or Catapult. Pokemon Arrow I saw as well, which would kind of fit in with the sword and shield theme. But anyway, we got to see a little glimpse at the world, which appears to be a little more like, I think they're saying London. Scottish. Some are saying it kind of somewhere in there, something like an old kingdom sort of look there to the games. I thought they looked really nice, but I did notice what a lot of y'all noticed, where the random encounter Pokemon seem to be back, where you don't see them on the overworld like you would in the Go games. You still are back to random encounters. So some people kind of dissecting what could that all mean and all this. Of course, there's 7 minutes of Pokemon Direct, which leads to the two-hour discussion of the seven-minute Direct. Not that, I mean, we're a three-hour weekly podcast on games, so I really have no room whatsoever to talk smack. But it is interesting how much dissection you can find on these little trailers. So anyway, and of course, there were brand new Pokemon unveiled, the starter Pokemon, which is customary when they unveil a Pokemon generation. They say, and these are the three new Pokemon. These are the Bulbasaur, Charmander, Squirtle.
It's always the same three types, too. It's always a water, plant, and fire.
It is. I think that's part of the tradition. But when they evolve, they usually get a second typing, like Blaziken was a fire fighting type. So, and the reason why I bring that up specifically is a lot of people are wondering, is this new fire type that we have in this game, Score Bunny, who's a little bunny that's a fire bunny, is he a firefighting type as well? And we don't know, because we haven't seen what the evolutions look like. That hasn't stopped very creative artists out there from coming up with their own ideas on what the evolutions could look like. But we really won't know until Nintendo unveils all of that in a later Direct. Maybe at E3, but the Pokemon games really have always tended to do their own thing on their own timetable. They don't follow any type of normal announcement standard with the rest of Nintendo. So, you know what? They will show the evolutions and all that when they're damn good and ready. But the other starters, shout out for Grookey, which is the little grass monkey, which is adorable. Did you see the Photoshop where somebody put a gun in his hand? That made me laugh. The internet does funny things sometimes. And Let's see, Sobel. I think if I'm saying that right, Sobel. One of the two. A water type lizard Pokemon who hides himself in water, and there's a lot of folks talking about it's the depression Pokemon, and a lot of dat me over on Twitter in looking at that Pokemon, which I'm sure is there a typing of the three that you prefer, Loki? Is there one of these that is jumping out at you as one that you want to pick?
No, I don't want any of them.
Are you not going to pick up Pokemon Gen 8?
No, I will. I don't know none of them. Probably the Fire Bunny.
I would say I'm on Team Grass Monkey. But
that Funky Monkey.
Yes, but it depends on what the evolutions look like. That's going to really sway me one way or the other, I think. I really want to know what the evolutions look like, because if they're ridiculous, I was not the biggest fan of this guy's final evolution in the last series of games. So if it looks like that again, then, you know, I might pick something else. Obviously, I went for Litten last gen because I'm going to pick Firecat, of course. But we'll see. We'll see what the maybe they'll come out with more plushies, and I can kind of expand what we have.
What?
Here.
Them merchandise? Never. My kids have the socks, by the way.
SS2100 Matt says that Beastie Boys reference flew over Rob's head. No, it didn't. I've just heard it 5,000 times this week. Bobby Blackwell says, for the podcast audience, who was that guy? Oh, I'm sorry. This is Pop Leo. I'm sorry. Thank you. Sorry, podcasters. I was doing a visual there. Pop Leo is the Pokemon I was holding up there. And then Litten was the one I was saying, oh, this is the one that I ended up choosing at the end of the day. Though the Rowlet is super cute, too. So let's see. See a Tiberian chat says, you just need to start buying Pokemon loafs. Don't I have enough Pokemon shit in this house? Like, you can already see. This isn't even everything. I have other stuff, too, that's not displayed.
I see
on
several Pokemon already.
Yeah, right? So it's enough. Tire Claw on chat says, you think he'll show up in the movie? Of course, there'll be 500 Pokemon movies. There's a Pokemon movie every year, and the new starters will show up in the movie as well at some point. Of course, there will be. All right, anyway, that's the early stuff on Pokemon Sword and Shield, and I'm happy they moved to Switch. I know there's some people that are like feeling kind of negative about the graphics and the changes and stuff, but I think it's way too early to make a snap judgment on the game. Like, there's going to be plenty more directs over the coming months that show us more and more details. Pokemon games are always full of things to do. In fact, one of my criticisms about Pokemon, I sometimes get overwhelmed with that there is too much shit to do. And I'm left feeling like I don't know what to do because there's Pokemon fashion show as like a side thing that you're supposed to do. And it's like, I don't have time for this or growing the trees and all this stuff, which apparently you don't have to do any of that stuff. But I feel like I just can't not do it when it's there. It's too much to do anyway. So we'll see. We'll see what they announce more for Pokemon in the coming directs in the coming months. In the meantime, Loki, you got this next one, right?
Yes. So PUBG is getting a parental lock on the game, basically, that requires children under the age of 13 to unlock it with the help of their parents. Of course, this is not in all regions. This is mainly just in it's being piloted for Chinese versions of the game. They're actually doing this with PUBG Mobile and Honor of the Kings. And so with this, they have, I guess, a way for your parents to basically go and sign in with like a parental code or something like that to unlock the game so that, you know, give your children permission to be able to play it. Because, you know, games are horrible and will cause your children to become stupid.
Well, I think this is more like when the kid, and maybe your kids aren't quite at that age yet, but they're going to be there pretty soon. When the kid takes the tablet to bed with them and they're up all night playing games on the tablet. I know this is a struggle I've heard from other parents that have kids of a certain age. It's like they take their phone to bed with them and they're up all night on the fucking phone. So there should be a way to like shut down the game so they can't do that stuff after a certain hour.
Yeah, and along with that, you know, it's basically saying that the new controls, it limits whether they can be, you know, played online. They have rules to reduce screen time, different ways to kind of curb that stuff. So,
you know what doesn't have parental locks? Books. So you could take a book to bed and read it.
That's just an actual lock. You just put it in a safe. Can't read it through the safe.
But yeah, interesting that they're rolling this out in China, although I think there's laws and governance in China that have come into play with why they've chosen to do it there first. But I think one interesting thing, if they do end up rolling out a feature like this in America, which wouldn't be a big deal. I mean, many of the folks listening to this show and watching the show on Twitch, you're not using these types of lock features and stuff like that because you want to play all the games you want. And if you want to stay up all night playing Fortnite on your phone, then you're an adult and you've earned it. But so many of you probably just don't use parental locks. But things like the Switch and stuff have parental locks that are very similar. It's just a matter of, do the parents know how to use them? Because I don't know, you know, I come from a certain generation, as do probably many of y'all, where like my parents didn't know how to use those locks or use the setting on the TV that would prevent me from watching Cinemax after 9 p.m., if you know what I mean, right? Like our parents didn't know how to use those locks.
Well, right, and I don't think for me, like I know how to use that stuff, but I don't think it's necessary because I just... You know, they don't have the game system with them, and we can tell when they have screens on. So it's just, it's not needed, I guess. But, I mean, if you're letting them have the device in the room and keeping it, you know, and it is an issue, then I guess you could do the parental locks if you need to. Or just do what I do, and since my, you know, internet is all based on MAC address filtering, I just take them out of the filter, and then they can't connect to the internet. Oh, darn. That breaks everything.
Okay, that's a good thought. Let's see. And some comments in chat. I love this. VG Realness in chat says, "Oh my God, take their fucking phones away, LOL. Sorry to be an old man, but we didn't have that in our day. So back in my day, we didn't have Fortnite on phones. So I don't know why kids under 13 are going to bed with a phone, let alone having one." And Bobby Blackwell says, "Isn't it past your bedtime?"
Well, if 1980 cinema is supposed to teach me anything, and I didn't have this when I was growing up, but... Back then, children had their walkie-talkies that they would talk to each other with.
You know, back in you know what we did back in my day? You ready for all the crazy shit we got into as kids? Okay, you know what we did back in my day? We left the house after bedtime. That's what we did. Like, when it was like, you know, or good night, I'm going to bed. You know, you go to bed, and then you'd hear when your parents go to bed. And then it's like, you know, your friend and you had agreed that you were going to meet at like 11 o'clock somewhere. So you snuck out of the damn house and you went and met up and I don't got into the trouble the kids got into at that age.
And then went and played with your phones out there.
We didn't have phones then. We had I don't know, TPing people's houses or whatever we did back in the day.
So. We had vandalism. This is so much better than, you know, staying up late and...
Sometimes it wasn't necessarily that you were doing anything at all except the thing that your parents didn't want you to do, right?
Whatever you do, no vandalism now that you're in bed. Don't worry, mother. I will not do vandalism in bed. Little does she know, I am going to sneak out and do all of the vandalism.
Bobby in chat says, we did actual illegal shit.
We burn things.
Kids today that do completely legal things. What a bunch of lame-os. Oh, God. SG100 Matt says, every damn kid had a beeper in middle school. I didn't have a fucking beeper in middle school. Why did kids... I don't know. Forget it. Anyway, we're getting into old man stuff. Let's move on. And talk about, speaking of old man stuff, here's this newfangled game. Though,
who's calling you in the middle of school day, like on the payphone, you know, to call you like, hey, give me a call. What? That doesn't even make any sense.
I only knew how to call with 1-800-COLLECT. Anyway, next story, Loki.
Anyways. So Anthem is apparently working on their loot system, which some consider broken because it's frustrating with the balance of what they drop towards the end game stuff. So some of the fixes that they're going to be doing include common and uncommon equipment are no longer to be dropped during the end game activities, which apparently is you know, having an issue with people are having an issue before where they're just ending up with all the stuff that they keep grinding at it. The resources needed to craft certain masterwork items from blueprints will be reduced from 25 masterwork embers to 15. Wow, that's 10 less. And none of this makes any goddamn sense to me because I don't play this game. And then they said many inscriptions.
The grinding has been reduced. Well, it's
but the details. The audience needs the details of this game that they're probably not playing. Yes, so they're making it less grindy so people aren't pissed off, so that people will drop more money on their game and they'll make more money because they're EA and that's what they want to do. Because remember, if you support EA in buying all those microtransactions, then BioWare gets to live another day. So, yeah. Other fun stuff about Anthem is, unfortunately, with the whole loot stuff, not only is that an issue, but overall, it hasn't done that great. In fact, Anthem's physical sales are half of that of Mass Effect Andromeda, which I think was not even that great compared
to... In Europe, I believe.
In Europe.
Okay.
But this is a snapshot, though, so... Right now,
is the pendulum really going to swing that hard in America
and
versus Europe?
Yeah, and it's physical sales. Granted, you know, digital sales are up, so there's that.
But are they up that much in 2 years since Andromeda?
No, and I want to say they were looking at also, they're saying that Anthem sold roughly a quarter of Destiny 2's week one physical sales as well from back in September of 2017. They were also comparing the physical sales... were both lower from Kingdom Hearts 3 and Resident Evil 2, which are recent games as well. So you can kind of compare the physical sales of that. So I don't know. It's not off to a good start.
Well, we'll see when the numbers come in. I mean, EA is going to have to...
They're not going
to
share the numbers if the numbers are bad.
They have to answer to their investors. So we're either going to see some numbers or we're going to see some real interesting wordsmithing happening.
See some numbers of people being laid off.
Let's hope not. I would be very sad about that. And, you know, I don't want to see BioWare go under, but... And I'm not. I don't want to turn into the dog pile on Anthem show because I know some people are having fun playing it. Questbuster in chat says... I don't even know who thought it was great to include common crap items in the highest difficulty dungeons. Drop rates are also trash, but I can't help but enjoy the javelin combat despite that. And I know most people I know that are playing the game are saying the combat is really fun, but it does sound like there's just, you know, again, I can't get help but get the sense. Yet again, it's a game that wasn't fully baked before it came out of the oven. And unfortunately, this is a reoccurring theme with a lot of EA things, except for somehow Apex Legends. But in some ways, Apex Legends isn't exactly a fully fledged game either. There's only like 8 characters in Apex Legends. It's not that many characters for, you know, a game in 2019, right?
Right.
But for that game, it does not seem to matter, you know? And I'm not hating
on Apex. What
did
Overwatch start with?
It's fun. Overwatch just got its 30th hero this week. I think
so. They probably had like 16 at least.
No, it was more than that. It was probably 24. I want to say was what we had: Anna, Sombra, Orisa, Brigitte, Moira, and now Batiste. I think 24, unless I'm missing somebody that came out. I think it's 24. So, and YYR points out if EA does have to do layoffs, which, again, we hope they don't, because there's been plenty of layoff news already. They'll have to share those numbers. They kind of have a legal obligation to their shareholders and everything with that. So Questbuster says, the combat is great. I just wish it was wrapped in a better game. S200 Matt says, I just started playing Apex Legends yesterday. It's really cool, although I feel bad for the people I'm teamed up with each game because I'm still learning it. YYR says, Overwatch had 21 heroes when the game launched. So I completely left out 3 people in what I was counting right there. But that happens. I don't have everything. Oh, yeah, I left out. I did leave out because I forgot Doomfist was one of them as well. So, yeah, there's some I forgot. Sorry. So, anyway. But, yes, I know Batista's Hero 30 because I was just talking about it earlier today. So, there you go. Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about some news regarding Final Fantasy XII and some of the changes that you're going to see with Final Fantasy XII, the Zodiac Age, when it comes out on the Switch and on the Xbox One. Because, you know, the game already came out on PlayStation 4 and PC a little while ago. So for those people that are thinking about double dipping, especially when it comes to the Switch and the portability, what's kind of new? What are they bringing to the table that hasn't been done before? There's going to be a license reset function. This is needed. I'm very happy to hear this. You can talk to Mont Blanc, the Clan Centurio leader in Rabanasta. You can reset and change your party members' jobs, allowing you to customize the jobs of the party that you want. So if you feel like you screwed up in building your characters, You don't have to start all over or reload an old state. You can reset. I think that alone is a badly, like, I'm in saying it out loud, I'm like, God, this was needed. I'm surprised this wasn't here before. So a reset will be very nice. Also, additional, more than one gambit set. This is pretty cool. Gambits are how you kind of program the AI for, you know, because you control one character, but the other two kind of do things based on a logic system known as gambits. But you're kind of locked into whatever you design. If you want to change it, you need to go in there and change it. Well, now there's going to be extra gambit sets. So you can do three unique sets to kind of switch between sets for different situations. That's a great idea, because maybe you don't want your other party members using big spells unless it's a boss, you know, things like that. So that's really smart. That's going to be neat. And then they're also talking about an improved New Game Plus, where you'll be able to have party members at level 90 and carry over items like weapons, magic, and gil. And then specific on the Xbox One X version, 60 frames a second. You'll be able to play at that.
Nice.
Yeah, very cool. I thought you could do that on PC version. So I think that's
You should be able to. It's a PC.
I think that's a new console feature, but still a pretty cool one at that. Let's see. This would be, if I were to buy Final Fantasy XII on Switch, which I'm going to admit, Loki, I'm thinking about it, it would be my fourth time buying Final Fantasy XII, because I had the original. I bought it on PS4. I bought it on PC during a sale. So this would be the fourth time, but now I could have it portable and I can reset characters and kind of, I don't know, Loki, what do you think?
You should do it.
Do you even own it one time?
Nope.
All right. Going to chat over at twitch.tv/Avog Network. Some love in the chat. VG Realness says Doomfist, Ash, the cowgirl, and Hamster. Hammond were the heroes I forgot. Thank you. Wow, that was a fun game. Who is Rob too old to remember? Let's see. Also in chat, Dr. C says, last time I tried to beat 12, it did not go well. Probably going to skip the Switch one. Oh, well. Bobby Blackwolf says, I liked it. Oh, that's about Final Fantasy IX. They're on a tangent on Final Fantasy IX because that also came out on Switch very recently. So some folks in chat are talking about that as well. ActDeft in chat says, Rob, you're saying that like you haven't done it before. That's the whole joke. I'm notorious for buying a game multiple times. Again, let's recall, how many times did I buy Mass Effect 3? There was the PC, the Xbox trilogy, PlayStation trilogy, and the Wii U. So I bought that game 4 times. So, and that wasn't even a remaster. That was just the original Mass Effect. If they do a remaster, I'll buy it again for sure. Anyway. Enough about me. Stop trying to do an intervention. Let's go to a new story. Loki.
Yes. So this is kind of an interesting bit of trivia, but apparently one of the producers on the new Toe Jam and Earl game, which actually just got released, I think.
Oh, yeah. I forgot they were bringing that back. That's cute.
Yeah. It was. I know we mentioned it last week during releases, but Macaulay Culkin. Yes, of Home Alone fame, and now he's doing a lot more stuff, but apparently he is quite the retro game nerd, and he is one of the executive producers on the game, because he was a huge fan of the original game. Mentions that he used to play a competitive, or he turned it into a competitive game with his friends, because he used to troll each other in the game, and they even made a drinking game out of it. But apparently, he met with the developers, and
has he actually done like real work on this game, or is it more like a ceremonial type of title where it's like, we're just going to call you a producer to get that little celebrity to have stories like this around the internet that get the knowledge of our game out there? Do you think did he actually do stuff on the game?
Basically he,
He
gave feedback, yeah. So he met with the developers and in their office, and he got to play the game. He had the beta for a few days, got to play that. He said he beat it, and he talked about some of the glitches that him and his friends had discovered in the original game. They said including a move that granted players infinite rocket skates. And in return, they showed him like some concept art and stuff like that. I don't think he actually contributed anything to the game, per se.
Besides his feedback.
Yeah, yeah. It was more of just kind of a fun thing to do.
SG100 Matt says the Toe Jam and Earl game looks good. Yeah, I hear it's actually getting pretty good reviews as far as like retro revival type things go. I think it's doing pretty well for itself, so that's pretty exciting. SG100 Matt says executive producer in title implies that he helped fund it in some way.
Maybe he did. Well, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. We don't know. I mean, they don't. Who knows? Let's see. Dark Tetsuya says never got into Toe Jam and Earl, but I have the Genesis collection on Switch, so maybe I'll check it out. And Questbuster says definitely one of the weirdest games I've played on the Genesis. Well, Toe Jam and Earl was kind of like a roguelike on the Genesis, wasn't it? So for that to be coming back is, you know,
so
it's timely.
I guess he started off like helping out the campaign with his like social media following to, you know, help promote the game is one of the things too that kind of got this attention. So he helped fund it by promoting it, I guess.
So it was kind of like what Kylie Jenner did for Fire Festival. Is what Macaulay Culkin
except
did
this actually came out in
and is actually pretty decent.
It's actually decent. And
I did that for Bobby, who mentioned in chat that he watched the Fire documentary this weekend on Netflix, which I still haven't seen.
Yeah, I haven't watched it either. My wife watched it without me, which I was disappointed. But
have you? I don't mean to tangent here, but a cheap plug for if you're not aware, my one of my spinoff shows, Shaking and Crying with Arya Snark, is back. We were on hiatus for a little bit, but it's back. There's been three new episodes since we came back. And one of the hot topics that's come up there that's worth asking about here is the documentary Abducted in Plain Sight.
I did not watch it. My wife watched it.
You really need to see Abducted in Plain Sight.
She explained the whole thing to me. It sounded
why'd
ridiculous.
She ruin it?
Why'd because I watched like I watched part of the last episode, but like I wasn't really into it. So it was I'm sure it would be funny from the beginning, but
it's not really funny, actually. It's kind
well,
of
well, like just
disturbing.
Like funny as in like just
shock like, and horror. Yes.
The hell.
Yeah. The hell. Exactly. So, all right. Anyway, VG Realness saying, oh, my God, you guys need to watch it. It is insane. I will at some point. Maybe that's what I'll watch before the next episode. We'll see. Anyway, let's move on to another one of your favorite topics, Loki mods. And
yes,
Skyrim.
And this is also kind of tying a little bit in with, you know, Fallout 76, I guess. So there's a mod that's been worked on for a while now called Skyrim Together. That's basically a co-op mod for Skyrim. They'll allow you to play Skyrim up to, I think it was like 4 to 8 people. But there's a little bit of drama going out behind the scenes because apparently the people that put together the team behind the Skyrim script extender have been claiming that the Skyrim Together people are stealing their code for this project. And so because of that, you know, they've even written in the code license for Skyrim script extender due to continued intentional copyright infringement and total disrespect for modern etiquette. This Skyrim Online team is explicitly disallowed from using any of these files for any purpose. This project's getting, you know, it's they've got, you know, $33,000 a month from their Patreon backers to help fund this project.
That's a lot of money.
And basically
for a fan project.
Yeah. And so, you know, in response, I guess the, there was a Skyrim, Together team member that posted a comment in Reddit talking about, you know, the Skyrim script extender drama. It says, we've had disagreements with the SKSE folks in the past, and I've tried to communicate with them, but they've never replied. So we stopped using their code. There may be some leftover code from them that was overlooked when we removed it. It isn't as simple as deleting a folder. Mainly our fault is because we rushed some parts of the code. Anyways, we're going to make sure to remove what might have slipped through the cracks for our next patch. And to be clear, you know, things they said, you know, of course, the SKSE members replied, you know, so to be clear, you started using our code, asked for permission, never got permission, continued using it, eventually removed part of it, yet somehow left some of it in there, continued the charge for access the entire time, promised to totally clean up a now license-tainted project. Okay? So there's still drama is basically what's coming out at the end of the day. My TLDR is I don't give a shit what's going on behind the scenes. I just want to play this mod. So whatever you got to do to get this shit finished, I don't care whose code you're in.
And how much money are you contributing?
I'm contributing zero. And that's exactly how much money I'm going to contribute to this. But I still want to play it. So can we make that happen?
I want something for free.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I hope they can work all their dramas out for the betterness of the player base. I mean, can't both sides to some extent admit, but we didn't make Skyrim.
We wouldn't have had to put so much goddamn code into it if it wasn't so fucking buggy anyways. Bethesda.
All right. Something that I actually logged into Fortnite today to take a look at this, because the band Weezer, you know Weezer, right?
Yes.
Say it ain't so. All right, yeah. Weezer made a new island in Fortnite to promote their new album. So the new album that just came out is the Black Album, although I think more people are talking about, was it the Teal Album or something, that has their cover. It's like an all covers album. It has their cover of Africa, which has been on the radio. No Scrubs is on it. So I think more people are talking about the Teal Album. They're talking about the Black Album. But anyway, maybe this is why they need to go to Fortnite. So you can go to Weezer World, but it's in creative mode. And I think a lot of people, when they're reading these headlines and making their snap judgments on these, they're thinking, oh, you do battle in Weezer World now and this stuff. No, it's this expansion. You may not be aware, but Fortnite doesn't just have the 1v100 mode and some of the other, you know, the team modes and things, but you can actually have a creative mode. So they kind of tried to do a Minecraft-esque type of mode in the game.
Yeah, they also have like they have a PvE mode too now. It's like battle.
Well, that was something. You know what's funny? That was always supposed to be Fortnite.
Right,
that was supposed
to
be the fucking game.
No, I know that.
Yeah. It's just like,
I remember when it was just, you know, it was before the battle.
Yeah, Battle Royale was just like the afterthought type of thing. So, anyway. And Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, there's a part of me that wants to check out Fortnite creative mode, but that would require me playing Fortnite. It's free. I did. I checked it out. And it's, you can just go in there and mess around. And I took a look at the Weezer World. And, yeah, so it actually plays songs from the album. That's the one reason I didn't do it as a clip here. I actually went into it intending to record a clip for this. And then I realized, oh, that's a bad idea because it has all this Weezer music here. And that's going to be copyright.
Yeah, strip the audio out.
Strip the audio out. So sorry. That's why I did not do B-roll for that tonight. So you'll just have to look at it yourself, I suppose. Or there's plenty of YouTubes and things like that. Maybe other people on Twitch that are streaming it as well. But that's, I mean, it's a very clever marketing idea, I suppose, to team up with this mega popular video game to kind of get your album out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure there's lots of artists that would love to get more promotion like this. But, you know, Weezer is of a certain, you know, level. So it's a very interesting combination there. So anyway, it is part of the Season 8 update. So you do want to make sure you're updated to the latest version of Fortnite, which has a bunch of new creative maps. Weezer's just one of many new maps that are in there, which is also, yeah, I noticed when I went in there, I was like, oh, Weezer World's like this first one of like, there's like seven of different worlds up here on the platform that you can go visit. So, yeah, kind of one way that Fortnite is trying to expand itself a little bit is to tap into a little bit more of the Minecraft-esque side of things. Very interesting. VidPower573 in chat says, Weezer World sounds like a place Cheech and Chong would go to ... Bobby Blackwolf also continues and says, yes, but I can be snobbish and say, I've never played Fortnite, just like how I can say, I've never played WoW. I like to at least try everything once, especially, you know, because I do know that a ton of people are playing Fortnite. I've even tried playing League of Legends, even though I'm not very good. That's why I went into Apex Legends as well. Because these are all very big ranking games on Twitch, and I know lots of games that people are talking about. So I want to at least have a base understanding of what these games are all about, even if I fully admit, but I don't really have time to sink all the hours into it myself because I'd rather be playing XYZ, which I think is also perfectly acceptable. I would say maybe the one place where I failed to do this is I haven't played a Madden game in a very long time. I have before, but it's been a very long time. I'm not going to drop $60 to try out Madden. Apex, Fortnite, League of Legends, those are all free games. So they're very easy to jump in there and try.
Yeah.
You know, very, very minimal stuff. But I'm not going to drop $60 on a game just to try it for that sake. So anyway, let's move on. I think we're going to go and now visit the classic game of the week. So we're going to take a trip into the gaming vault and find a game that we think, hey, you guys should be checking out the game this week. Dark Sakura, obviously not here tonight. She had picked a game. We're going to roll that over to a future week. So I hastily got some footage together for a substitute game for tonight, which is one that I fondly remember, and we're going to talk about tonight. We are going to talk about the game Super Adventure Island is what we're going to talk about tonight. And I think, we have some footage of this game. So this is a classic game of the week, Super Adventure Island, which, of course, was for the Super Nintendo. So Super Adventure Island was was released on the Super Nintendo, and part of the reason that I remember this game and love this game so much was that the music is amazing. I don't know how well you can hear it in the background there, but it was done by Yuzo Koshiro, and it's one of his finer soundtracks that he did. Yeah. This game was released in Japan in January of 92, and it was released in North America in April of 92. In Japan, it was called Master Takahashi's Great Adventure Island. It also was released on the Wii Virtual Console in 2011. And it was the starter of a Super Adventure Island series because there was a Super Adventure Island 2 that came out later. There were three of the regular Adventure Island games on the regular NES. There was also a mobile phone game called Super Adventure Island, but it is not the same game. So it is not what I'm talking about here tonight. So the plot of the game is that you are trying to find Tina. Even though they mistranslated, I guess, the name to Genie Jungle in English materials. That's kind of interesting that the name completely changed based on translation issues. So it's kind of your, you know, very typical 90s save the princess from disaster type of games. That whole, you know, I think we've seen this many, many times before. But anyway, an evil sorcerer plans to turn Tina into a stone statue for eternity. And you're not going to let that happen. You're going to venture through five stages, four areas in each stage for a total of 20 levels to make sure that doesn't happen. In the first three areas, you go through like a obstacle course, which is what's happening in the video that we're seeing right now. And then the final area is a boss battle, which we should see one of those coming up here in a little bit. Obviously, some of the differences between this Adventure Island and the Adventure Island on the NES that made it very different was much improved visuals. I mean, this game looks phenomenal, especially considering it's kind of early on in the Super Nintendo's life. Like, the sound, especially, and again, I call that out, the sound is so good, and it's not just Yuzo Koshiro. I mean, that's a huge part of it, but just like the sampling and kind of what they did with the Super Nintendo's built-in hardware is really great, and it's really something you should check out. So in the game, much like before, you can use an axe, but you also get fireballs as you upgrade your weapon. You also get a boomerang, so you can either throw an axe that moves in like an arc type pattern, or you can throw a boomerang, and you're trying to collect fruit that fills up a life bar that slowly counts down as you move through the level. You could think of it kind of like a built-in timer. And the fruit helps restore on that timer. There is a score in the game as well. So as you grab fruit, kill enemies and things like that, you increase your score. So if you want to play for score, that is something you can do as well. That's a little bit about Super Adventure Island. I guess it is also one of the games that is featured in a manga that was called Cyber Boy. They came out between 1991 and 1993. So I think we're just about to get into one of the boss battles here on the video that we're looking at on our Twitch stream. Yeah, so you can kind of see, you know, and again, another thing that really like set this game apart, you know, being that it's on the Super Nintendo hardware versus the Nintendo hardware, is that, you know, these bosses are gigantic, right? They were pretty big on the Nintendo version, you know, taking up multiple sprites, but, you know, these bosses were definitely bigger. You had like these transparent like ghost things, and the head and the hand kind of are all moving separately. You know, it's pretty intricate and pretty awesome. And as far as me, like, one place that I remember this game is I remember this was one of the very first Super Nintendo games that I rented, right? Because you could actually, you know, rent stuff from the video store. And I have fond memories of renting this game. And again, a lot of it was just kind of after the first time I rented it, I remember renting it again because I wanted to hear the soundtrack. Because it was so awesome. So years later, when I put together, like, oh, it was Yuzo Koshiro that did this. And, of course, Yuzo Koshiro did, what, like, Streets of Rage. He did a lot of the Midnight Maximum Tune racing game stuff. You know, he's a great composer. I'm a big fan of his work. So I'm not surprised at all that a game like Super Adventure Island was something that kind of caught my eye and ears because he was a part of that. So there it is. Did you ever play this game?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, what'd you think?
It was all right. I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a fun game. So, I mean, the game itself, you know, it's not Mario World or some of the must-have Super Nintendo games of its time, but I think it's fun enough.
It still holds up.
Yeah, it still holds up, and it looks really good. You know, it's still, as far as, like, graphics and stuff like that, it really holds up after all this time. So there it is, your classic game of the week, Super Adventure Island for the Super Nintendo. And I'm looking in our chat over at twitch.tv/VOGNetwork. Dark Tetsuya points out, I know he did the soundtrack to Dungeons & Dragons, Eye of the Beholder, the Sega CD version. Phantaz points out Skateboard Boy. Oh, yes, there are those parts of the game where he gets on a skateboard and he's kind of like automatically moving. And I think in those parts, your life isn't draining. So that's part of like the trade-off is that if you kind of move into a constant state of motion, you don't get the penalty of your life slowly draining away. VidPower573 in chat says, I wish they would revisit the Adventure Island series, whoever owns the IP. Well, I know the developer of this game, let's see, was Hudson Soft. So
that's Konami.
Konami. So there will not be any more Adventure Island games, but there might be a pachinko machine in the near future. You can always cross your fingers. Okay, obviously I'm being a little bit silly, but...
Well, fruit and slot machines.
All right, anyhow, we're going to go to our next story, which was something that I actually taped a little segment about earlier today.
Okay, so also in the news this week, Overwatch unveiled their 30th hero that they're planning on adding to the game. So as you can see in the background here, we're taking a look at Overwatch, and this is Batiste, who's the brand new hero that they're adding to Overwatch. So the way I'm able to actually look at Batiste right now, you may not know this depending on what platform you play Overwatch on, but on the PC, there's this version of the game called the Public Test Region, where you can actually log in and take a look at new characters as they're being developed. This is probably a good way for the Overwatch development team to actually see, you know, how are they performing in a game? You know, are they too strong? Are they overpowered? Do they need to be rebalanced? And that sort of thing. And that's the kind of thing you can really only tell probably from doing live play. They can do all the stuff they want in the office, but this is, you know, really a good way to figure it out. But it's neat because it actually gives the rest of us kind of a way to get a sneak peek at the hero and see everything that they're doing. This is not something that you can actually do on the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox One version of the games, at least not today. Not to say that'll never ever be the case moving forward, but we'll see in the future. So anyways, you can actually, you know, see they have them in the hero gallery and you can kind of get a little closer look at them, except they don't actually have everything here in the test region yet. They just have some of the basic things, like you can see, you know, some heroic type emotes here for when they win matches and stuff. You can also, let's see, the little highlight intros, which are, you know, always kind of fun to watch. But these are the very basic things. They're not going to show you, give you a real sneak peek at the advanced stuff, like what kind of skins might Batiste kind of have extra for, you know, in matches and winning match poses and things like that. They're not going to really add that until probably, you know, about another week or two when they get a little closer to actually putting him in the full game. So let's actually take a look. We can actually go into a training match, which is a good way to kind of get a taste of the character for the first time. I know I use this practice range a lot to try to just get the feel for characters I'm not very familiar with. So you'll see Batiste is over here with the support classes, and he can actually go into the match. And you can actually kind of get to use him a little bit here. And you can see that he has a gun there, a very loud gun that I can shoot these little training bots with. That's one thing to do with it. So his left click, and I'm going to be speaking in PC terms just because that's the way I'm used to playing the game, although I'm sure, you know, it's very easy to figure out what this would map to if you're a PS4 or you're an Xbox One person. But the left click is going to be that button that attacks other robots, but the right click is actually this kind of like, it's like a bomb type of thing. Kind of reminds me of like maybe what Junkrat would use with his weapon, but it's actually like a heal bomb. So when you use that, it's actually like heal bombing these friendly bots here. You can see those little tiny graphs are actually increasing their health a little bit. And then, of course, when I run out of heal bombs, or if I run out of the little regular ammunition to attack guys with, he's actually going to go into his reload animation, which he can also trigger at any time by hitting the reload button or pressing R. Now, some of the real fun stuff would be some of the other abilities that he has access to. So I'm going to wait for these little bots that died to come back. But I will mention that you can always at any time see the abilities. I think it's, is it F1 or F12? Can't remember what it is on PC all of a sudden. Oh, yeah, you hold down F1, and you can actually see what some of the different abilities are, and it kind of gives you a little recap. Oh, these are going to do, you know, if you hit Shift, it's going to do this. And again, I'm pretty sure PlayStation 4 and Xbox One have similar features as well. So you'll notice the Shift key, which is kind of like, I guess his first ability, is like a regenerative sort of aura. So if I hit that button, you'll notice the bots suddenly start to increase health very slowly, and it lasts for a few seconds. So it was able to absorb some of the hits that were coming in from the bots, and you can see it kind of heals them. I'll do it one more time here. If they don't die, you can really get a sense of how much they heal. You can also see you kind of threw out a little bit of an aura there, so you can get a sense for the range. I noticed it doesn't draw on the ground what the range looks like. Like, say, if you were playing Lucio and you can actually really see the range of heals and so forth, would actually show there, but it doesn't show with that. Now, some of the other abilities that he has, this E key is actually going to do an ability that they call the Immortality Field, and it's actually going to prevent these bots altogether from dying. So, oops, I did that too soon. I thought I had a chance to place it. That's part of the reason why you do the test realm, because you get to know your different abilities there. So he actually just threw it. I thought I would actually get to place it first. So now I got to wait for that ability to recharge, which will only be a couple more seconds here. So you see a little cooldown there, which will give those guys time to... So this bot on the right here is getting very close to death. So when he gets very close to death, what I'm going to do is throw down that immortality field. Okay, so now watch. Next time he gets shot, his health is not going to drop past a certain point because that immortality field is up, and that gives me a chance to heal him up, do whatever I need to do. And once that field is down, because obviously it's not going to last forever. Immortality is kind of a very powerful ability. But it'll give me a chance to, you know, drop that field, heal up, do what I need to do. Especially if there's, like, another support character. You know, if there's a Mercy or something, you could really use that immortality field to heal somebody up to full. So that, you know, it'll take a long time to get them killed again. All right. So that's just about all the abilities. Except he does have a jumping kind of ability. If you use this control... You know, he can kind of hold down control, and it actually lets him fly up. So he can't really fly, but it's kind of neat that he has, like, this high jump ability that he can kind of charge with control, and then he can kind of get up to these higher platforms that most characters wouldn't be able to do. So that's just kind of a neat little extra thing. High jump boots, if you will. And then, of course, lastly is his ultimate ability, which is kind of... It's a little different. I like it. It's something you're really going to have to pair with other abilities. But the Q ability for his ultimate is the Amplification Matrix. So that's going to do a matrix, and it's going to double damage, but also healing effects, depending on what's passing through the matrix where. So, for example, if I put the matrix down, and this is the one you actually get to place. This is how I got confused earlier. Well, let me show you. I'm gonna kill this bot, or this bot on the left. And you can see, you know, it took about three hits to do him in. But with this field, look at that. It just took one. And if I go to the other side and do my heals, look how much healing he got as that passes through that field. So that's what it, and you'll notice it doesn't last long at all. So that's going to be interesting to see how that works, because you're really going to have to take coordination to make the most out of that thing. But I could just imagine, like, a Bastion turret on the other side of it or something like that that's going to really shred the heck out of the other team if it's timed right. So... It'll be interesting to see if Batiste has a place in the competitive mode. It's something you're going to see in the Overwatch League. Not all heroes seem to get equal representation in the Overwatch League, so I know it's something the developers are probably working a little bit on balancing, but I know it's just a matter of time before Batiste makes it to the game. I know I love to play support characters. I like to play Mercy, Lucio. Not so good with Anna, because I'm not a very good sniper, but I do like to play support characters, and I also like playing Junkrat as DPS, so just this, like, heal bomb thing, this is going to be awesome and a lot of fun to play. So I'm definitely looking forward to Batiste hitting live realms very soon. So there you go, a little sneak peek at Batiste, the 30th hero coming to Overwatch, announced by the team this week. And now we'll go back to the show live in the studio.
All right, and we are back here live in the studio with episode number 766 of our show already in progress for tonight, March 3rd of 2019. I can't believe it is already March.
Yep.
But wow. I don't know how much of that clip you saw there of the Batiste and Overwatch. You don't really play Overwatch at all, do you?
No, I have it, but I don't play it.
It's yet another one of those games you just have. But you just my
coworker, he peer pressured me into buying it, and then... Then I played it a little bit, and I was like, I can't really dedicate a ton of time to this, so I'm not going to play it anymore.
It's one of those things I play, like, obviously very casually. I never get into the competitive stuff. I know season 15 like just started in Overwatch, so there's a lot of people really getting into the competitive stuff right now and talking about placement matches and stuff. That's never really been my thing in Overwatch, but once in a while I enjoy a casual match, especially like with friends. Again, that's another one of those games that's kind of like fun to stream with friends or just get online and play multiplayer with friends. But it is a bummer that things are so split up. Like, I have some friends on PC, but I have other friends that only play on PlayStation 4, and then yet others that play on Xbox. I really wish, I mean, I understand why Blizzard didn't want to keep all or pool that all together, especially when it comes to mouse and keyboard versus controller, because the games are actually tuned separately because of that. But
do they have PlayStation and Xbox, though? Do they have crossplay with those? Or
No. Not yet. Maybe it won't be that way forever, but that'll be up to them. But anyway, I'm excited about the new hero. I think he's got a lot of very interesting moves and looks like somebody that I could actually enjoy playing, although I'm sure for the first couple weeks that he's out, everybody is going to be playing, because that's always what happens with a new hero, is that everybody picks them. And you can only pick a hero one time in a match unless you're doing that special mode, the No Limits mode in the arcade. Then you can pick as many as you want. But for the most part, you can only do the one. So anyway, let's move on with some rapid fire news and talk about some other things happening around our industry a little quicker tonight. Loki.
Yep. Let's talk a little bit about what we're going to be getting for our free games for the month of March. So starting off on the Xbox side of the house, we've got Adventure Time Pirates of the Enchiridion. I don't know how you pronounce that, but that's going to be coming out for the month of March. And then for the second half of March through the middle of April, we have Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. And then for the first half of March for the Xbox 360 backwards compatible games, Star Wars Republic Commando. And then for the second half, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. So that's pretty nice. Four games there. On the PlayStation side of the house, this is the first month that they are not giving away games for other systems aside from PlayStation 4.
Well, when you just killed one of them.
So the only games you get this month, you get Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered, which is pretty great, and The Witness.
Ooh, that's one of those games I never got around to playing that everybody's like, you need to play The Witness, and I just never did. So that's
so
cool.
Those will be available starting March 8th. So cool. I mean, I still though, like, as a contrast, I understand that Call of Duty, that's a pretty decent game, but in contrast to just reading four games on the Xbox platform versus the two, you know, it right. doesn't skew it in their favor, I should say.
Okay, fair enough. Let's travel over to some news about Evo.
Hey, hold on.
Oh, do you have one more?
We got one more thing to talk about.
I'm sorry.
And very important news regarding a very popular adventure game franchise, the Leisure Suit Larry franchise. So we have Leisure Suit Larry Wet Dreams, Don't Dry. That's rated now for the PlayStation 4 and the Switch. And should be coming out at some point, but we don't know much about it aside from the fact that
New people are doing this now. I think there's new people involved in making this. I don't think it's the developers that did that last game that didn't do so well.
No, it's not. And based on the screenshot, it looks pretty decent. Like looks like
it kind of has
a
90s Sierra aesthetic look to it.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
I'll check it out. I even played the shitty ones. I mean, so it's fine.
Well, Magna Cum Laude, that was the one that was not great, right? Wasn't that the name of it?
There was one that had a funny dialogue system that you were talking to women, you're a little sperm, and you had to dodge stuff. And that was funny. But the game was not good.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat points out, I'm pretty sure Al Lowe still isn't involved. It's probably a safe bet that this, you know, it's now just about the IP and trying to sell games just based on the strength of the name Leisure Suit Larry and what that means about the type of raunchy humor you're going to get in a game.
It means absolutely nothing to the people that were probably... Yeah. You know, buying the games nowadays.
Yeah. Anyway, now I'll talk about EVO 2019. The official lineup for EVO has been announced, and the games that will be a part of it, including Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Dragon Fighter Z, if you will, Street Fighter V, Tekken 7, Mortal Kombat 11, Soul Calibur 6, Samurai Showdown. Did you know that they're making a new Samurai Showdown?
No.
This is not the old school Neo Geo. Well, I mean, it is still, it's like that series, but now they're doing like a new one. Mm. So yeah, it looks pretty cool. That was some other news that I don't think maybe our show rolled tonight, but I'll mention it now. There's a new Samurai Showdown coming. It looked kind of neat. So I'm being into that. So that's going to be a part of it. But it's not what's a part of the lineup that people are talking. It's what's not a part of the lineup, because guess what got bumped this year? Melee. So Super Smash Brothers Melee is no longer in the top nine, the main games that are in contention there. And there's many people that are saying, finally. But, you know, there's other people that are like, I kind of think now that you have Smash Brothers Ultimate, I'm not hearing a lot of, like, it's bad or I don't like Ultimate. Like, I do feel like most people accept Ultimate as kind of like the definitive edition because it does have every character. And sure, there's always going to be people that want their retro throwbacks.
Right.
Yeah, there's always going to – I understand. I respect that. But, you know, as far as, you know, in
that's
year,
why you don't see, like, Street Fighter 2 on there. I mean, you have five.
That's true. So, anyway, it is the year 2019. So, this is the first time Melee will not be featured since 2012 because there was another – I think it did take a hiatus at another point not long after the game came out, before the competitive scene kind of built itself back up. So, there you go. It is not happening there. Let's see. Some folks in chat. YYR says, still, Melee was fun to watch. ActDev says, finally – Bobby Blackwolf says the people that still like Melee is because they found glitches that were never intended, and that's why they own everyone else in Melee, and Ultimate doesn't have said glitches. Well, I mean, it's not like the Melee community suddenly can't exist simply because they're not in Evo. I bet somebody is streaming that game on Twitch right now, and go for it. And there's still going to be tournaments, and it'll be part of – it's just not going to be on the Evo stage this year. So that doesn't mean the game – you know what else isn't on the stage? Dance Dance Revolution. But I still know people to this day that don't shut up about that game, and that is just fine too. So it's not going to kill the community just because it isn't there. Unfortunately, this story is not loading for me, but I think I know the gist of what this was about. There's a Sega Mega Drive Mini that's happening. So they're doing like another one of those mini consoles, but this was for the Mega Drive. And they want you to vote. What do you want? Which Sonic the Hedgehog, which Puyo Puyo, or which Shining Force title do you want to make sure is in this? And I would think the correct answer would be all of them, but for some reason Sega's looking at limiting this. I don't know why they.
Because those ROM file sizes are so huge, we can only fit so much onto one console. Fucking dumb.
I know. Anything? I saw you got the story. Is there anything important that I missed in that?
No, it's just basically just they have three polls right now: Sonic the Hedgehog or Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Oh,
Puyo Puyo.
It's this or that. It's this or that.
Yeah. Puyo Puyo or Puyo Puyo Su. And then they have Shining Force: The Legacy of the Great Intention or Shining Force 2.
Por qué no los dos? If I could
exactly
call
it's
up a famous
stupid
GIF that's out there. Why not both? As for all of those questions. All right. Anyway. If you have not picked up Final Fantasy Dissidia, or Dissidia Final Fantasy NT, if you will, a free version of the game is coming out for PlayStation 4 and PC on March 12th. But, of course, since it's free, you can't play everybody. You only get a rotating weekly roster of heroes and villains. But, of course, you can purchase characters if you'd like, and you can buy more weapons a la carte as well. If you are already playing the game, this should be breathing new life into the multiplayer section of the game and giving this game a second chance, because I'm not sure. I don't know where the financials are at for this game, but I got to admit, I played the demo that they put out, and I had to file it in the I don't get it category. Like, sorry. Maybe if you're a Dissidia fan out there, put together one of those seven-minute segments that explains the game to me. Because
the original Dissidia, I was kind of like that, too. I was like, okay, so I slide around on these things sometimes, and then I hit people, and then that and stuff is happening, and I'm not really sure. But granted, the original Dissidia was back on the PlayStation Portable, so I don't know. Yeah. Or I think it was the PSP, or was that the Vita? Jesus, I don't even remember.
The original was the PSP.
Okay, so it was PSP.
So we had it as a classic game not that long ago, actually, funny enough. So anyway, but I you know what, despite, you know, all sales shade aside, what a great new way. I mean, the game's been out for a little bit now. It's been out for several months. So I think all the people that were going to buy it face value have probably done it at this point. So what a good way to breathe like a second life into the game by doing a free version. And you know what? Maybe now I can give it another shot. Maybe something didn't click for me in the demo, but it will in the full game. But at the price of free, I could excuse me, I could go in and take that risk and check it out. So yeah. We'll see. All right. Anyhow, let's travel around the world and check out some release dates, some other things that are coming out this week. Loki.
Well, this week we've got a game, Alien League, that's out on PC. Dead or Alive 6 coming on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Actually, I'm sorry. This is the first. That would have already come out. Okay, let's do on this week. Not much, actually. Left Alive on PC and PlayStation 4. Devil May Cry 5 coming out on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. And then Kirby's Epic or Extra Epic Yarn on the 3DS.
All right, traveling over to Japan and looking at the releases over there. Not a lot, of stuff. We have just a couple games on the PlayStation 4. Flowers, Les Quatre Saisons. I think it's got a French name, but it's a Japanese release. That game is out this week on March the 7th. But I think the big game is Devil May Cry 5, which is the same day. It's a worldwide release, so it's the same day we're getting it in the U.S. as well as, spoiler alert, sorry, Europe. So that's the big one on the PlayStation 4 this week. PlayStation Vita's obviously starting to slow down a little bit, but it's not dead yet. They've got a release on March 14th, but I guess I'll get to that next week. Quickly checking the Nintendo Switch to see if they've got anything big coming out there. No, it's a slow week. Devil May Cry 5 is obviously the big release and kind of taking the attention, but not a very competitive week in Japan this week. That's it. How about Europe?
Europe, you have a few games coming out. So starting off with Left Alive, that's going to be out on PlayStation 4. The Occupation on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Kirby's Extra Epic Yarn on 3DS. And Devil May Cry 5 on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. That's it.
Any titles in the next week or anytime soon that you're looking at picking up, Loki? To add to your backlog of things you won't play?
Actually, I was thinking about maybe picking up Trials because they had a new Trials game that came out this week. But I'm not sure if I'm going to play that right away. I actually went back and was looking at playing the last Trials game because I still have that. And I don't remember what they called they had that spinoff Trials game that was, well, they had Trials of the Blood Dragon that I checked out. It was kind of lame. It was just okay. And then they had the Trials, and they had the extra special Trials with the unicorn and the flaming cat and this crazy stuff. So I need to go back and play that. But the new Trials game looks all right. I don't know if I want to pick it up right now. I may wait for a sale for that.
All right. Well, let's go to the mailbag. Every week we invite your emails. Participate at orangeloungetrader.com is the place to send emails. And we read some of our favorite emails here on the show. Actually, we got a great response to mailbag last week. We have 4 emails.
Sweet.
We got a lot to talk about tonight. So let's get into it. So we're going to do our first email tonight, which comes to us from Mir Muse is the one that sent in this email saying, "Dear OLR, I've been listening for 12 years at my factory job here in Baltimore." That's a long time. Thank you very much. "It helps pass the time, but I was always half listening in a very passive way. Some info was missed, sorry, because work came first." You got nothing to apologize for. We're fine.
Sorry, I half listened to this show too, so it's fine.
We're fine being background noise. It's all good, and especially if you're trying to listen to us at work. I completely understand if work has to come first. Yeah, but like Loki jokes. I mean, he jokes, but like sometimes, you know, as we're trying to do a live show, like other things are going on. Like we might have to completely adjust what we're doing on the fly because, you know, we unexpectedly had a host out. Or my cat will be causing terror in the other room and I've got to go tend to it. So sometimes we have to multitask as well. It's all good. Anyway, Mir Muse continues. "Now with Twitch, I watch what I can live. I love reading the chat scroll, and if I ever think of something to add, I can on the spot. Better yet, when I finish watching on the archives, my husband is often right next to me, and we watch and talk together about the gaming news. Let's be honest, the only news that really matters, LOL. Bottom line is I think the Twitch move was fantastic. I feel more connected, more interactive, and more represented. I've told more friends about the show because they don't listen to podcasts, but do watch Twitch streams. Keep up the good work, Mir Muse," whose name is noted there as Emily. So thank you. Thank you so much for that. And, you know, I mean, we were always a live show with the audio part of it. But I do think there's something about the Twitch community and being able to see the chat on demand, which you couldn't do before. I mean, you could be in chat if you're there live. But if you, you know, weren't able to be there live. But a lot of people are kind of – watching the live experience when they can during the week, because if you are a subscriber at VOG Network, which you can do, you know, use your free Twitch Prime if you're so inclined to subscribe to VOG Network, you get the chat stuff and the video side by side. Although I will caution you, chat only saves for like 2 weeks, I think, because if you go back, because you can watch any episode since we moved to Twitch, so you could go all the way back to like the December episodes, but chat's no longer there. They only save chat, and that's a Twitch decision, not us. They only save the chat scrolls for like 2 weeks. So you do want
to
watch.
We'll just have to. We'll just have to incorporate it in the bottom somewhere.
Yeah, you can add to the chat too if you feel so inclined. So even though it won't be there live, we actually see the comments later. So you know, especially if you have something really profound or something you want to say, like you know, if it's something that catches my eye, I'll bring it up on a later show. Like maybe you play a game like Dissidia, and so you want to leave a comment about it as to what we're all missing out on.
The trailer looked cool.
It did.
It's just the game.
I just don't understand. I thought it would just be a fighting game, and it's kind of not that. All right. Anyway, let's see. There's a PS to this. I'm a very sick person, so I have a few ideas for your starting panels. Oh, those little things we do at the beginning of the show. Again, that's part of the Twitch thing, but the little will not be seen tonight. So I'm not going to read those because I might. There's actually one of these that's really – oh, wait, they're all good. But one of them is like I'm going to use it next week because it's timely good. So.
Well, I thought for sure we would have one with what the hell's the meme, the trolley thing that's going around, that oh my god, the kids.
Oh, Momo?
The Momo challenge. I swear I thought they were going to have a Momo.
I got one for I'll just say it now and then y'all act surprised you see it later. Cooking Momo. How about that? You like
that?
Yeah. That would have been a good one for tonight. I wish I thought of that. Maybe in a future week. We'll do Cooking Momo in a future week. All right.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. moving on. Don't worry. Momo will fix it. Let's get to an email from Flocko Jones, who said, just wanted to clarify something that came up on the last show about Ninja. While I do take some issues with the guy, he seems like an overall entertaining streamer. But he has not, as Loki said last week, dropped the homophobic F word on stream. Perhaps Loki was thinking of the recent story where the DJ Deadmau5 dropped that slur on his Twitch stream, then just non-apology apologized for it.
I can't remember who the hell's dropping the F-bomb everywhere. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Too many people that need to stop, that's for sure. But I do think last week when he said that, I said, I don't know if that's true, Loki. So I'm glad Flocko Jones is here to correct it, because we shouldn't attribute shitty things if somebody didn't actually say those things. So our apologies on that. But otherwise, everything else we said, I think, still holds true.
Yeah, probably.
Which I don't remember what we said, but...
Yeah, I don't remember.
Anyway, Flocko Jones continues. Oh, and I also wanted to answer Metal Mayhem's question from the call last week about what critically panned game do you love?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My favorite critically panned game is Game & Wario for the Wii U. It's one of my favorite Wii U party games, despite its 61 on Metacritic. Now, that's mostly because I love the Pictionary-style sketch game, but I even found a lot of the other included minigames quite fun. Way better than the 61 score would have you believe, at least. Anyway, thanks for the streams, and as always, have a great show. Flocko Jones. Well, thank you. I appreciate that, because it's like it's a little polite correction, but followed by a participation. So that's good. And I remember Flocko being a fan of Game of Wario, because I think that's where I played it, was at his place. So makes sense to me. Oh, great. All right. ActDef does want to point out 61 isn't bad. It's just average. I still think it works as an answer, though, because sometimes, you know, an average.
On the Nintendo bell curve, it's probably
that's
terrible.
True. On the Nintendo bell curve, yeah. All right, we have another email tonight, and this email is from Redertainment, who says, Dear Mr. Smush and other people, by now you've probably talked about the decision Apple made to delist episodes of podcasts that include the episode number of that podcast. If you haven't discussed this decision yet, please feel free to rant. Okay, so here's what's up. So Apple sent an email to all the podcasters that talked about some good guidelines and I think some tags that they generally saw that people weren't really using. And I don't think the email was worded as well as it could have been, because part of the email kind of made it sound like, or gave that impression, that if you're putting episode numbers in your titles because you're not using the tags, we're not going to accept your podcast on iTunes, or we're going to delist your podcast from iTunes. And as you can imagine, a lot of people threw a fucking fit over that, because a lot of people put episode numbers in their descriptions. Of course, including us at Orange Lounge Radio, but many different shows do that. Now, it is very important to note, because, you know, before you guys that have been following the news send me the emails and chat, Apple did reverse course on this decision. So they saw the tweets, they got the emails, the calls, or what have you, and Apple sent out a follow-up email that made it very clear in bold, large font, we will not delist your show if you have your episode number in the title. But then went on to kind of say, we're talking about the tags, and we want you guys to explore the tags. And so for the sake of this email, too, because I don't think in the email we ever talk about that Apple did reverse course on the decision, I think it is an important thing to put out there. But, you know, it does bring up this point that whereas Apple brought podcasting to the forefront, you know, podcasting existed before iTunes.
Right.
But Apple definitely brought that to a huge – I mean, our numbers here at Orange Lounge Radio were never bigger than that first month that Apple launched iTunes, because we were a gaming podcast that existed beforehand. And so we were on iTunes that first week. And so we were doing really, really well. Our numbers were like higher than they've ever been. But why aren't they still that high? I guess our show sucks. I don't know. No. All the big websites and all the celebrities and everybody else started getting into it and kind of diluting the pot. And, you know, I love indie podcasts, and I'm all for more people and more diverse perspectives on games. So I'm not butthurt about it, I swear. But I do think it's important that now at this point in 2019, I don't think everybody's getting their podcasts on iTunes.
No.
We have Spotify, we have TuneIn, we have Google has their own, and there's other ones as well. And you can listen to Orange Lounge Radio. We're not on Spotify yet, but I am going to correct that. That is merely a intentional problem. It's nothing against Spotify, but about an upcoming move. And I don't want to have the Spotify there until the move happens. So there is a reason for that. The only one we intentionally held back on was Stitcher. I will not have the show on Stitcher because for way too long, Stitcher was not updating this feed and they were not doing anything about it, which caused our listeners to send us emails saying, where is your show? Why aren't you updating the show? And so I said, you know what? Fuck it. And I pulled it from Stitcher, because if Stitcher can't accurately represent this show, then I'm going to put the listeners somewhere else. And this is what it kind of came down to for me with Apple as well. And I wrote some tweets about this and I was like, you can't kick all of us off iTunes. Like, NPR is putting episode numbers. A lot of nonfiction people put episode numbers in there. You know what? Apple cannot kick us all off. They really can't. Let them try. We'll simply advise our listeners to go somewhere else. Would you guys be willing to go somewhere else besides iTunes to listen to this show? I bet many of you would be happy to be here on Twitch or somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just saying that podcast, I saw way too many people have that gut reaction of, fuck, I've got to go through my entire feed and update everything right now because I don't want to get kicked out of Apple. And I was kind of like, I lit my cigarette and crossed my legs and said, let them fucking come. Let them fucking come. And, you know, I think if more of us would band together like that, you know, as indie podcasters would stick together. And when, you know, a website tries to control what the podcasting standard should be, which no company owns, I think we do need to band together and put our foot down and say, not on my watch. And that'll
just
be
because
that.
Siri doesn't want to get confused.
Yeah. Well, no, it's about the tags. And from their perspective, I get what they were getting at, but they just didn't communicate it right. And so they heard that loud and clear that they didn't. And I think they kind of did a good job fixing that, at least on the back end. There you go. I don't know if there's – I'm trying to think if there's anything else on that whole debacle I need to say. I don't think so. I do want to finish Redertainment's thought, though. It is beyond evident that the decision made by Apple is and was a dumb fucking decision made before anybody fully even bothered to think of the wide-ranging consequences of this dumb fucking decision. Can you think of any others? I mean, other than the decision 62 million plus people made in 2016. Any reasonable person knows that the morally abhorrent racist charlatan is a mistake and has been since its conception. I'm just reading the email. That was, again, from Redertainment. So thank you very much for the email. But yeah, at the end of the day, no, I don't think any one company should control the podcasting standard. And if they try to do it, then we made you and we can break you just as easily. All right. Anyway, I'm trying to see if we have any chat comments on that whole thing. Yeah, only Sonic says just need an RSS feed. That's what podcasting is. Podcasting is audio RSS. That's what it is. It's just podcasting was kind of a catchier name for it or what have you. SSG100 Matt says, I mean, metadata is important in media. It helps things get organized and be seen. I get Apple's point, but then again, Apple hasn't really updated their tagging system well. Swangtong points out, that happened to me with Stitcher. I couldn't listen for about a year until I found you again. Totally thought you quit podcasting. See, that pissed me off when Stitcher did that. So, I mean, I think they got bought again, and so they're probably under somebody. But I'm sorry. If Stitcher would like to have Orange Lounge Radio on their player, they can come ask for it. That's where I'm at.
They're all who?
Yeah, exactly. I know it's not going to happen. I know damn well it's not going to happen. But I can, you know, I can sit here and go, you know what? And I'm going to ask, will you update my feed in a timely manner this time? And what direct person can I contact if it's out of whack? Anyway, Tiger Claw in chat says, even though there are options to stream, the option to listen to podcast, I'm very careful at how much data I use. So I download them on iTunes first and then use software to sync them to my Android phone. I'm curious, why aren't you using the Google Store if you have an Android? Because they have podcasting as well. At least I thought they did.
Google Play has podcasting. It's through the Play Music app. Hmm. That's what I use.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, but obviously there's tons of podcasting apps at this point, so I don't think any one can really dictate the standard anymore. It is not the year 2005 or 2006 anymore. Anyway, let's get to our last email tonight, which is from DJ Rama S, who says, hey, everyone, Rama here. I've been having this thought lately. I've looked at my gaming and anime collections, realizing that at times I'm buying these items more for the sake of having them as opposed to playing or watching these discs.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought of Loki suddenly. I look at my collection and realize that I have not finished most of the series or played through what I've collected. So what I'm asking is this. Have you ever looked at your collection and think that you're buying these games more for the sake of collecting them because they'll become hard to find or not? Thanks for taking my email. Now I'm off to rebuilding my website. Hopefully it'll be up and fixed by the time y'all get this email. Rama. And good luck on the website relaunch there, Rama. So, Loki, are you buying games just for the sake of buying them?
No. Sometimes I'll buy them because I'm like, oh, I want to play that. And then I just move on to something else and don't end up playing it. Like, or usually if it's on sale, like sometimes I'll pick up stuff. Like I have Dragon Age Inquisition. Still haven't touched that. I have Titanfall 2. A lot of EA games, actually. And Need for Speed. Those are all on deep sales. And I purchased them and still haven't played them. Wolfenstein. I have probably such a huge library of games, both on the PlayStation Store and through Steam, that I have just not played most of them. And yet I'll still keep continuing to buy them, and sometimes not even on sale. Like in the case of Kingdom Hearts 3, I just bought it because I was like, oh, hey, that'd be fun to stream. And then I didn't play it.
You know, I just like to have physical games. And maybe part of that is about collecting or so forth. But I always think in my mind, what if I want to sell it back someday? And I can't tell you the last time I sold a video game. But I can tell you the last time I loaned out video games. And so I know that's a big thing, too, is that, you know, a friend of mine will be like, oh, you're done with that? Can I borrow? Like, one of my friends borrowed Mass Effect recently just to start playing through that, especially with backwards compatible on Xbox One now and everything. So they've been playing that. So I think that's kind of the biggest perk to having digital. But you're right. There's a lot of like...
Physical.
Wow, Rob. Physical versus digital. Yeah, I mean, digital is starting to look more and more, you know, especially when it's like on the case of Xbox. If I buy a digital, I can play it on my PC or my Xbox. You know, and I've talked about this before about the whole, like, what's the, you know, value of the game? What's the equity about the disc you hold and so forth? You know, if digital can offset that value, be it through a deep cut sale through. But if something is $60 to buy it digital, or $60 to buy it physical, you know what? I'm going to buy it physical because at least I have the option to loan it out, sell it back. I have all of that. I don't have that when it's digital.
True. Way I look at it, though, like especially when I'm looking at physical and digital, it's normally I'm just purchasing it. I'm probably not going to end up selling it back because, let's be honest, like if you sell something back, like way down the line, say when you trade in your system or something like that, it's probably not worth anything anyways at that point. And you're really not getting much. It takes up space in the house. Like, for me, I'll decide, oh, hey, I want this game. I'll download it, you know, or I'll purchase it digitally, and I'll set it to download on my system remotely, and then come home and play it. Maybe. That's assuming I actually play the game I purchased. But, you know, same thought process there is I could do that. I purchase a lot of games digitally. I purchase the Lego game digitally. I mean, most of the games I have on the Switch are digital. I do have some physical games, but those, it's sales and getting stuff used usually. I don't know. I walk into the store all the time, like GameStop, when my kids are playing the demo kiosk, because God forbid they play the Switch they have at home. They want to play the demo. Whatever. So I'm actually looking at used games all the time. Like, I'm like, is there anything I want? And I just kind of look at them, no, not really. I'm not going to, nothing really stands out like, oh my God, I need to pick this up. I don't know. I just, eventually someday when I retire, you know, I'll have all these games I can play, and then I'll be able to do that.
She-Hulk in chat says, physical is going away for good someday.
No.
I don't know if it would be 100%, though. I get what you're getting at. I do think we may see, like, disc drives go away. We thought for a little bit, some of the early rumors about the Xbox One is that there may be a version with no drive. And that could be true, emphasis on could be, about PlayStation 5 and the next Xbox. But I do think if the system can handle physical media, there's still going to be that. And I think there will always be, even if it went 100% digital, GameStop or those type of stores would still have, like, here's this collectible plushie you can get for Pokemon Gen 8, and it comes with a digital code to get the game online. So that there's still, like, a physical something-something integrated with the digital. I just bought, funny enough, a brand new microphone for my studio computer, because I did one of those package things. Like, I did the Overwatch, like, I taped that in advance. Yeah. I did one a couple weeks ago. I did Tetris 99 a couple weeks ago, right? And I was like, God, my audio is fucking horrible on this. I'm going to just get a new microphone. So I went and got a new microphone, and guess what? I got a Yeti microphone. Guess what it came with? A $50 gift certificate to the Ubisoft store.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought it came with Assassin's Creed Origins, because they had that originally.
Close. Okay, so, like, it's like $50 off a $60 game on the Ubisoft store, or whatever that is. So that's the kind of stuff I think you may still see in the future. Is that really physical going away, though? But maybe the way we think about what physical games are, that could maybe change in the future. But, you know, Loki joked about it earlier in the show, but it's still very true, especially when it comes to a series like Pokemon. The merchandising, the physical shit, that is all still very important. And I think as video games is more and more a part of our society that isn't just this underground thing that nerds play, as Fortnite has an aisle dedicated to it in Target and things like that, there's always going to be some sort of physical manifestation of gaming in the world, even if it isn't in the future a disc that goes in the drive, if that makes sense. So, but good discussion. So anyway, great emails tonight. Thank you guys so much for the emails. We hope more of you will send emails. Don't be shy. Send your emails for next week. Participate at orangelaundry.com is the place to send those emails. Let's move on and get to the next story that we have on deck. Loki.
So GOG has quietly let go of a dozen of their staff, apparently, this last week here. They didn't say why the layoffs happened, but that there was some financial issues that caused the layoff. Basically, there was a rep that said that they're letting people go is never easy. We have been rearranging certain teams since October 2018, affecting the closure of around a dozen positions last week. At the same time, since the process started, we have welcomed nearly twice as many new members and currently hold 20 open positions. So it just sounds like restructuring right now.
Hmm. Still not the best thing to hear about. I feel like every week, literally every week since this year started, maybe 2 weeks into the year, we've had some story about layoffs.
And they were saying that, you know, that says there was a staffer that had, you know, been, I think, let go. And it said that it was about 10% of the staff that was affected by layoffs. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, it's restructuring. So, I don't know. This isn't as big as like a software company or something. Like, I mean, it's still it's a platform. People being like,
well, aren't they still kind of trying to come out and say because of this increased competition with game makers getting a larger share of the profits, which we all know the Epic Store came in and kind of took a swing at that whole thing. Isn't that kind of all stuff they're trying to blame for why they're just going to have to scale back because they have to give more money to the game developers, to be competitive.
Well, competition's hard. Yes. So, that's going to be an issue that they have to do, like give people a larger cut of their profits. But
I'm disappointed that GOG kind of left the retro stuff behind. Like, I know it's still there, but I mean, I get because everybody in chat's going to scream it out. I know is that the retro stuff just isn't as lucrative. You don't make as much money. It's, you're selling it for less money. I doesn't mean I don't miss it, and that there's so many things that I feel like are missing, but rights, etc. I get that I can't just have my dream list of games and that's going to suddenly happen on GOG, but it is just a bummer that more of that couldn't have been fleshed out. But obviously they had to get into the newer stuff to stay competitive. And it's competitive, and so we're starting to see. But, maybe the silver lining is that, okay, so unfortunately GOG had to let 12 people go, but maybe something like the Epic Store is going to have to hire 12 people because it's getting bigger.
Well,
and,
they just said they let go of, 12 positions, but they are hiring for 20. It's just that, those positions, they're restructuring. So 12 of the positions that they had, say they were, customer service or something, maybe they need 20 positions to fill in, development of a new platform or enhancements to their online platform or whatever. It's just needed in different parts. They can't just shuffle some of those people. Maybe the skill sets didn't quite line up with what they needed for those other positions. So I don't know.
SSG100 Matt in our chat says, well, PR-wise, GOG didn't do themselves any favors last year. I'll just leave it at that. I wasn't going to say anything, but since you said it, I just didn't want to be tacky about, maybe this was the PR department that had to. But since you said it, I unfortunately just companies really need to watch it when it comes to their PR and who represents them, because all that stuff can have a repercussion on the rest of the company. And people that maybe had nothing to do, hardworking artists and programmers and people that had nothing to do with those types of discussions on how to be edgy or cool or things like that. So PR companies really need to and PR divisions and departments and so forth really need to watch themselves. And that's all I'm going to say about this week as well as last year. So let's move on, shall we? To our next story, which has to do with a Konami 50th Anniversary Collection Arcade Classics rating that showed up. Nothing's been officially announced by Konami, but the game was rated recently in Australia. And isn't that how a lot of these games seem to leak all the time?
Yes, they leak with announce or usually ratings boards and stuff showing some sort of rating, either a PEGI rating or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, this has many people saying, ooh, Konami made things like Metal Gear. And so that could, well, hold up. If it's Konami Arcade Collection, I wouldn't get too crazy about what you're going to see in this. If you want an idea about what to see in this, look at the types of Konami games that have been released on places like Xbox Live, Arcade, the Game Room. Believe it or not, there was a lot of Konami stuff in that Game Room when that was still a thing. God, I missed that service. Konami's kind of released stuff from their 80s catalog. If you need an idea what that looks like, I would. And again, we don't know what's in it, but I'm just hypothesizing. You might want to be thinking a little less Metal Gear, Castlevania, and the things they're known for on console, and maybe be thinking a little more about things like Scramble, Jungler, Frogger, maybe. Although Frogger's a weird one because Sega actually
released in Frogger. They throw in Frogger all the fucking time.
Time Pilot.
When no one wants it.
I love Time Pilot. I would love to see that. Maybe Tutankham. I'd love that. But again, some of these were Stern was involved with that too. Gyrus. I love that game.
Gyrus,
so I'd be there for that. What is it? Track and Field was an 80s arcade classic as well. Yara Kung Fu was an original fighting game classic. But there was Gradius in the arcade. So you never know, Salamander in that whole series. You might see some of that. Technically, there was a Castlevania game in the arcade, so we might get lucky and see Haunted Castle could show up. And I would say if you guys get really lucky, maybe stuff like Sunset Riders you know, when you get into later Konami years. I doubt the Ninja Turtles game, because Konami did the at least the second game. Didn't they do the first one? Yeah, they did. They did the first and second Ninja Turtles arcade game. But then you get into licensing.
Simpsons arcade game never happened.
Yeah, I don't know if that. Yeah. So, I mean, those things only happened. What, like, the Simpsons arcade game did come out as a download, as did the Ninja Turtles, but that was, like, through new partnerships with, like, Ubisoft, EA, or whoever had the current rights at the time.
Yeah.
Those came out. So, I don't know. But also, you know what? Maybe, if we're really lucky, here's the one I would be crossing my fingers and toes for, is that in 1992, they made the X-Men arcade game. So, again, license, if they could get all that worked out, I know I'd love to see that. So, we'll see. Oh, DJ Rama S also chimed in chat with that. I swear I said it first. DJ Rama S also suggests Bucky O'Hare. Let's see. Some folks in chat. Blades of Steel, Double Dribble. Dartusia pointing out technically Castlevania was in the arcade, but the original game had its issues. As Jonah Hunter Matt says, Russian Attack probably. Yeah, you guys in chat, you guys are naming the right stuff there. YYR said Ninja Turtles, Simpsons, X-Men did all come out on Xbox Live Arcade, so it's not impossible. You're right. It's not impossible, but it may be a little trickier if it's in a collection where it's going to be harder to make sure that
rights
holders
get. It's less lucrative for them to relicense it, you know, to. It's not the first of the value add to it. I just don't think that they would go that far to get some of this stuff in there.
Now, I guess it's worth asking, because I do see it in chat. Beatmania, Dance Dance Revolution.
I wish, but I don't.
How would DDR work on the Switch anyway? Like, you, I guess you could do with arrows. Beatmania could do the 5-key like you used to do on the PlayStation if you downed the controller. Like, I would love it. Don't get me wrong, but I just don't. It would be awesome if Konami would put them in as like secret things or like Easter eggs. But they're just why would they? Why would they do that? This is, you know, but I. Prove me wrong, Konami. I dare you. I would love that. Right. Moving on. Loki, you got something for us, right?
Yes. And so this is kind of a silly ad to the game, but there's this game called Plague Inc. where you design your own like super viruses and watch them take over the world and stuff like that. So now they have a scenario, thanks to fan demand, that involves anti-vaxxers. And so apparently they had a petition out there that says if this petition gets 10,000, we will add a specific new anti-vaxxer scenario into Plague Inc. And, of course, over 20,000 people signed it, so they are going to be doing that. So that's kind of funny.
Is there actually anybody anti-vaxxer still left? I feel like it's one of those things that everybody jokes and makes jokes about and so forth. But like nobody actually confesses to actually being an anti-vaxxer anymore.
I think that there still are.
Ugh. Get with it, people. Well, I guess. Okay. Yeah. As I'm saying this aloud, and I'm sure before you all scream at me in chat, and I'm believe me, I am on the side of kids ought to be vaccinated. And I work for a company that says that and puts that
out
there.
It's stupid not to be vaccinated.
But I'm thinking about there's the whole measles thing that just happened in Washington. So you're right. There are still morons out there that are.
It's just the problem.
It's Facebook's fault. It is all Facebook's fault. Nobody would have heard what Jenny McCarthy had to say if they hadn't shared it on Facebook. Facebook should have shut that down when they had the chance. But free speech. Blah, blah, blah. So anyway.
I like Jenny McCarthy when she was set dressing. But, you know, now she has opinions. And
all right. Oh. Everybody in chat, I knew it. I knew that happened. Everybody in chat, there's many anti-vaxxers. I know people that are anti-vaxxers. Yeah, they're on Facebook.
But hey, you know what though? To balance the balance the universe out with all this, you know, pro-vaccination stuff, we're going to give Goop a new Netflix series. So that's a thing.
All right. Anyway, just vaccinate your fucking kids. Like I work with medical professionals, and they all agree: vaccinate your fucking kids and yourself. Honestly. All right, anyway. Moving on. Something a little more lighthearted.
Yes, so this is kind of cool. I remember actually getting this within a box of cereal, but you may remember a while back, especially if you're a kid of the 90s, that there was a game called Doom, and then there was a famous mod or Tolkien version of Doom that was free with a box of Chex cereal, and that game was called Chex Quest. And Chex Quest was a kid-friendly, non-violent Doom total conversion that you could play, and it came with your box of cereal. Well, guess what? It's getting an HD remake.
Why?
Because it's fun. So Chex Quest HD is apparently a passion project of a guy named Chuck Jacoby.
Nobody's getting paid for
it. And with him and volunteers have created, with permission from General Mills, so it is endorsed, that they have fully committed to.
Somebody at General Mills was like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? Is he like, all right, sure, you free advertising for checks? Sure, why not?
Yeah, so they're remaking the whole game, including the five. It says a 5-level single player shooter. So neat that it's a thing that's going to be coming out.
When is somebody going to remake Sneak King and all these other great advertisement games?
I want that shit re-released because that was fucking brilliant. And they promised more. They were supposed to be making more games, but it hasn't happened yet. I need more. But if you would like to follow the progress of Chex Quest HD, they don't really have an official page aside from their Facebook group. So facebook.com/ChexQuestHD.
All right. Fair enough.
And you can go follow the progress of Chex Quest HD.
When's Chex Mix Quest HD? Because I prefer Chex Mix.
I want to see a version of Chex Quest built into the new Doom game. Like, you know, just like that, the frenetic, you know, action that is of the modern Doom.
Oh, man. I love it.
It's going to be awesome.
All right. And one more story for you guys tonight about a website where you can go on adventures. It's a site called NoClip, and it's at the URL noclip.website. Not a .com or a
.website.
Because, you know, they expanded the .dot domains later. So there's noclip.website, which has levels stripped out of existing Nintendo games. Things like Ocarina of Time, Luigi's Mansion, Wind Waker, Super Mario Sunshine. And what do? You just go flying around looking wherever the hell you want. It's just an exploration. That's why it's no clipping, because you can go through walls. You can fly anywhere. So you can explore worlds beyond maybe what the original games would let you explore. And I know some of you eat that stuff up. Like, this, Jamie loves this stuff. She has a whole Mass Effecting. I wish she was here tonight, because she has that whole Mass Effect Tumblr that was like dedicated to finding stuff hidden in the Mass Effect games through mods like this that would let you clip through Mass Effect. So people like to do this stuff, you know, breaking down the Nintendo files and all that
stuff. I messed around with some of the Mario Kart maps. It was pretty neat.
Did you?
Yeah.
So it's just, you fly through. Yeah. And I notice there's like GIFs and little videos where you can go through fast.
Yeah, it's pretty fast.
You can do a Mario Kart course at F-Zero speed.
The only, I did try, they have a few experimental things in there. So they have like some non-Nintendo games. They also have Super Mario Odyssey. Although that really wasn't loading fast, so I didn't do that. But the Mario Kart maps, and I did Super Paper Mario, which isn't too exciting to look at because, I mean, it's Paper Mario, but it was neat.
All right, and some folks in chat, of course, that got linked in chat, thank you, from Matt, and some folks are saying, Phantasm chat says, holy crap, this NoClip website is dope. Yeah, we thought it one of those things that's kind of fun to explore, especially because I know a lot of y'all have a soft spot for Nintendo games, and this is just really cool that it kind of just lets you explore them in a different way. So it's like, you can, what was behind that house, or what was in that place? What was on top of the hill that I couldn't get to? This website kind of lets you do that. So pretty cool. Oh, I like that type of exploration stuff. I wish I'd had the time tonight. I was going to throw together some B-roll to actually, but with all the changes we had to do it last minute, I ran out of time. So you'll just have to go adventure and look at it yourself over at the noclip.website. So, VidPower573 in chat says, I see myself spending hours on this website. I understand the struggle, that's for sure. Anyway, now is the part of the show where we're going to go to the listener roundtable, where you can participate, ask us a question in the chat room, or if you'd like to head on over to Discord in our green room, you can actually call into the show as well. I promised last week that we would incorporate tweets back into the show in this segment as well. So I wanted to go over to twitter.com/OLR and actually look at some of the tweets that came in this week, because there were a few of you that tweeted. And I do want to say very nice words to people like Spyro557, who like wrote a tweet that was like, everybody should listen to Bobby and OLR tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern. I just want to give you a gold star listener recognition there, because you know, we say at the end of the show, help us spread the word and get your friends to listen. And Spyro definitely did that with the tweet this week. So thank you so much for that. But we did get a tweet from M. Colburn on Twitter, who was answering the guilty pleasure question. A lot of you guys like that question. So M. Colburn tweeted us saying, my guilty pleasure crap game was Winx Club on the DS. which Shane, that's one of his too, because he I don't know if that was the one he worked on.
He was. Yeah.
It was one of those Winx games, but and Flacco, I think, to some extent, also considers that a guilty pleasure game. So sometimes those games that are like silly things for kids, like sometimes people get into them. I don't know.
I guess one guilty pleasure game that I played, but only because it was so bad, was Driver 3.
Oh yeah.
Drive 3 or
yeah. I was just thinking one I didn't mention last week, Spice World on PlayStation.
Oh yeah.
Let's put another girl through her paces.
Yeah, that doesn't really have the same connotation as
I know. I loved the Spice World game that was so stupid, but I loved it. Anyway, do we have any last-minute stories, Loki, before I get I'll talk to you in chat. If you guys have any questions in chat, you can feel free to ask
them. I don't know. Did you see the new trailer for Detective Pikachu? That looked pretty awesome.
Oh, I did. It did look awesome. You're right.
Yeah, so I want to definitely check that out still, even more so than before. There's a rumor that Sony is offering refunds on Anthem, no questions asked. So that may be a thing. If you're looking to get a refund, maybe.
Is that an exploit, though?
I don't know.
All right. Well, let's get to a Discord chat, because we do get folks that want to talk to us on Discord. So I want to get to the first of those calls tonight. Hello, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hello, it's Delvin from Video Game Realness.
It is so good to hear from you, my streaming buddy, Delvin. How are you doing tonight?
Good. I'm, of course, a longtime listener, but first-time caller.
Is this really your first time on the show?
First time calling, yes.
Wow. Well, welcome. Oh, well, wait. Oh, you know why I'm confused? Because you were here.
Yes. I was on the show, but this is my first time calling into
okay.
the show.
Okay. I will accept that. Well, what to what do we owe this call tonight? What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to talk about something that happened with one of my friends, and then it made me get into thinking about online and on consoles and paying. So basically, he wanted to try Anthem because, you know, there's all the hubbub about Anthem. So he rented the game. So he rented the game from, I can't remember what service, and got it home, but he doesn't have PS Online. So he couldn't play the game. So in order to play the game, you had to play the at least 1 month minimum to play this game, which there's no way to play the game unless you have online.
I didn't even think about that. You're right. Like, a game like Anthem is, like, always online. There's really nothing to do single player. Well, I thought you kind of – I remember in the demo that I played of Anthem, you kind of could do a single player, but it was like, are you sure? Are you sure? You sure you don't want to play with other people? But then now that I think about it, it's still like putting your progress in the cloud, and you're still online whether you're playing with other people or not. So interesting. Huh.
Correct. So he could not play at all unless he had paid for online. So it got me thinking, you know, when Xbox Live came out, it was a luxury in, you know, to play online with your friends, to play Halo online with your friends and other games. But now in 2019, where many more games are require online, Overwatch, Fortnite, Apex, now Anthem, is it valid for consoles to still charge you for online gaming when now the games are require it as a basic necessity to even play the game?
Well, obviously,
I was wondering what your guys' opinion was that.
The easy answer is no, because especially when you consider PC, right? You don't have to pay to play online on PC.
Correct.
And you're able to do that there. So the easy answer is no. But the reality, Delvin, is that people are still paying for it. So as long as people are paying for it, they're going to keep charging for it. But this is going to put Microsoft in a very interesting position in the very near future. And this is what I've been saying, Delvin, on the show for like the past 2 years. One of my E3 predictions has always been Microsoft's going to announce that they no longer are going to charge for multiplayer online, because why are they doing it when they release the same games on PC and you don't have to pay for online? Instead, the Xbox Live Gold monthly thing is going to turn into this Game Pass thing that they've been wanting to sell you anyway. Like, why don't they just bait and switch Xbox Live Gold with the Netflix thing they want you to have anyway?
The Netflix thing, they charge more for it, and so I don't think that they're going to want to get both of that. They're just going to get money wherever they can.
I just don't think in the long run, especially when they, you know, when they start to blur the line between PC and console more and more, I'm not sure that strategy is going to sustain itself. So they're milking it while they still can. But I would, you know, I'm going to, again, foolishly predict, as I have for the past couple of years, within the next few years, Microsoft's going to be the one to drop it first, and everyone will cheer, and then it's going to peer pressure Sony into doing the same thing. Nintendo will cling to it because they were late to the party, and they're going to say Nintendo Online, all these other things that they do. That is my crazy ass. If Michael Patcher can make
predictions,
so
can I. Do you guys not
so
like your free Nintendo games each month? I mean,
all right. Now,
well, my thing is that I think it should, like, as you mentioned, you can have the premium service and get the free games. That's fine. But I think first, for basic online playing with your friends, or even just being able to play Fortnite, Apex, Anthem, these games that require online, you cannot play the game unless you have online. That should not be charged for anymore going forward.
Now, let me give you another perspective here, because YYR in our chat is, you know, who has made games and done things for things like Steam, is giving us another perspective here I think is important to weigh. So YYR in chat says, once again, I'll make this case, because I believe we've had a similar discussion before, but probably every time I make my dumb prediction. Yeah. The platform owners offer functionality to developers, including matchmaking, leaderboards, achievements, etc., as well as run all of the servers to back that up. And it costs the developers nothing. Someone has to pay for it, and they ask the gamers to do that. This strategy back in the OG Xbox and early 360 days led to most games having multiplayer features that otherwise would not have had them. So that's an excellent perspective, YYR, and I don't want to discount that perspective. However, the reality is, what rules the talk of the gaming world? Perception. Perception is going to rule everything. And the issue is that the perception is, on PC, I get to play it for free because EA is absorbing all that cost. You get to play it for free, but you have to do it through Origin because EA's eating that cost to get you to use Origin, right? But the perception is, it's free, but it's not free. The other places. So I definitely don't want to invalidate your point or say it's not valid. It is, but I still think that perception, and I think there is, you say the gamers are eating the cost. I still think there's a possibility Microsoft may be willing to eat that cost to try to win people into its, you know, PC and all-in-one kind of ecosystem. They may be willing to take that risk. What do you think about the comments I just read from YYR, Devin?
I think that it made sense before. I just think going forward now, the way that the infrastructure is there, it's been built. Once upon a time, it didn't exist. So, yes, we had the gamers pay for it. But now the infrastructure is there. It does. Let's be real. This does not cost Microsoft or Sony a large amount of money to run servers for online. It doesn't in the grand scheme of things. So I think the infrastructure is there now. They don't need to continue charging for it. Just charge for your premium service, your game streaming, your free games. I think that's the best thing going forward.
You know, I just thought of something, too, that is going to bring this issue to a head maybe sooner rather than later. And that is those rumors, big neon sign rumors, the best Fleetwood Mac album rumors that came up last week on the show about this fact that Nintendo and Microsoft may very soon have a we're getting in bed together type of arrangement. So how's that going to work? If I have a game like, let's say, what were the games that were rumored? Like Ori and the Blind Forest was one. Well, that's mm-hmm. mostly single player. What else did they rumor for the Switch? There was Cuphead, right?
Yeah.
Which I guess has a two-player mode. But, I mean, let's say that Microsoft puts one of their more multiplayer games on the Nintendo Switch. How's that going to work?
Well, here's
am I gonna need Nintendo system?
No.
Am I gonna need Microsoft system?
Here's how it works with like PC, like when you're playing cross-platform for Forza Horizon or something like that. I don't need to pay for gold in order to play online because I'm on PC. Whereas if someone has an Xbox, they have to play for gold in order to get online.
So wouldn't it be weird that like if I play Forza or whatever, and again, this is all rumor anyway, so this may just be a whole bunch of smoke and mirrors, and that's fine too, but to think this through a little further, what's going to happen if that ends up being the case, that these Microsoft games are playable on Nintendo's console, so they will let you play for free? I think that adds to the list of why Microsoft is sooner rather than later just going to eat the cost of gold.
I don't know.
We'll see. I don't know. Anyway, VG Realness, I think it's an excellent question, and I think it's a thing to watch at this E3 for sure. But again, obviously, as the consumer, I want to sit here and say, no, they should get rid of it. But the reality is, but will they when people are still paying for it? But how, you know, as the industry is changing in front of our eyes, as we're moving from physical to digital, is this going to be reevaluated too? And I think it will be. I think this whole online system and who's paying for it and all that will be reevaluated. We'll see.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the call. It's so good to hear from you.
All right. Bye.
Hey, wait, plug your Twitch real fast. Plug your Twitch.
Oh, come follow me at twitch.tv/VGRealness.
Excellent. Thank you. I will. All right. Bye. All right. Let's get to another call here. We have a few people waiting. I want to try to get to everybody. Let's get to this next call here. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Kaijudo.
Great to hear from you, Kaijudo. What's on your mind tonight?
No, I just wanted to recommend some VR games for you because I know you said earlier you wanted some games that would like work you out, like Beat Saber.
Yes, please. I would love to hear it.
Number one game you got to get, and I hope it's still on the market because the company that made it, they went under. So they're no longer like updating the game. Well, I think they're fixing bugs, but you know, like they're not responsible for doing any more with the game. So hopefully it's still there. But that's Spark. That's the main one you have to get. That's like it's like a combination of everything. It's like tennis, fencing, boxing, dodgeball.
I remember you've talked about this before. You're a fan. Oh, yeah. I remember this one. Yeah.
And it will work you out. And it's not it's not like the running game that you were playing where you're just like constantly swinging your arms and you have to run around the map. Like you're just standing in one spot, but the workout that it gives you is like your arms and everything. You're swinging, you're dodging the ball, all that stuff, but you're basically standing in one spot, which I think is like ideal for like a lot of VR sports games. You know, I really don't like the games where you're like kind of like trying to traverse a map because that gets really confusing. So yeah, definitely get that one. Then there's the Creed boxing game, which is another game where you're kind of like standing there boxing a guy. And then there's another boxing game. And then there's Rec Room, which is a free game that you can download. And yeah. That's a community thing where you're like, you know, you're playing laser tag with people. There's a dodgeball game that really doesn't work that well. And there's other activities. They actually have like a battle royale game in there as well. Where you're, like,
Rec Room is a PC game though, right? Not PlayStation?
No, it's PlayStation.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
It's free.
It's cross-platform. Yeah, it's cross-platform. So,
well, shit.
You'll be playing with. Yeah.
All right. I'll look into that.
That's one of the other great things about VR is that there's a lot of cross-platform play in a lot of the VR games. So you're always playing with somebody on Rift, or now you got the Oculus Go. Just everybody playing together. So definitely check those out. That's all I wanted to do. Just recommend those games.
Hey, I love it. I love the recommendations. You know, and somebody, there was another game that was recommended to me by Bobby that I looked at on the store. I just didn't get around to it. It's not really an exercise game, but it was basically F-Zero in VR. It was something like Radial G or something. I don't remember the name.
Well, you can do Wipeout. Have you done Wipeout?
Yeah, Wipeout.
I can't find my disc for Wipeout. I think I loaned it out.
Don't.
So, yeah. There's the downside to loading out your physical games, by the way. And I will let you digital people have your field day. There is your downside is that I loaned it out. I can't remember who I loaned it out to, and now I can't play the fucking game in VR. But, yes, Wipeout is certainly there, too.
Yeah, rebuy it. It's cheap, man. Super cheap.
I know. It's true. All right. Well, thanks for the recommendations, my friend. I'm going to look into it.
All right. Later.
All right. Take care, buddy. All right, let's get to at least one more call here. If you want to call into the show, though, join our green room over on Discord, vognetwork.com/Discord. But we do have at least one more call tonight. Hi, you are on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, this is Deft.
Hey, Deft, it's great to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Well, let's talk about the beta.
Let's. You first.
Okay. Well, basically, one of the things the beta did right, it was a really great PlayStation Classic without being the PlayStation Classic, the first of all. And really, like, it wasn't like really that expensive to get most of the games you wanted, and it's like really, really easy to play, and even on the PlayStation TV, because you could do that too, and probably not as cheap, or probably not as bad as the PlayStation Classic was.
The PlayStation Vita.
That's one of the things I really, really am baffled that Sony like really did good in this or did well on it on the Vita, and pretty much screwed up on the PlayStation Classic.
I will say the PlayStation Vita was an excellent example of Sony knowing how to do backwards compatibility. The PSP stuff worked very well, especially considering that, you know, the Vita didn't have a disc drive, so you couldn't just like actually physically put in the disc, but it supported stuff that you had on the marketplace. They opened up the PSP catalog to be able to rebuy things, and it worked out very well. The Vita was great in that regard for the compatibility. And then, of course, as you say, the PS1 games and being able to experience all that all over again, that was great. And yeah, it was definitely a strong point for the Vita, and I think the reason why a lot of people are going, but why not PlayStation 4? But, you know, that's a whole nother dialogue.
And even then, it had the remote play on PlayStation 4, and you could actually use it as a controller, as you mentioned earlier in the show. So it really was a really great system. Don't know why Sony didn't, like, focus or marketed that, like, really well, because I remember them mentioning it, but it was like, oh, it can do this and nothing more. They really needed to market the Vita more, because it was a really, really great console.
Agreed. I wonder if in 5 years we won't get an interesting post-mortem on the Vita, and maybe get some insider info as to what really happened on the inside, or I don't know, maybe it'll forever be a secret, because, you know, this is a very large company with very strong contracts and things of that sort, so we may never really truly know the answer. But these things have a way of coming out as people move on to other jobs and get asked about them in interviews and so forth. You know, we're getting all the dirt on the Atari and Intellivision days now as those guys go to the different conferences, and, you know, some of them are very open about the drug use that was around back then and things that you didn't hear about in the 80s. So it'll be interesting to see, like, what really happened with the Vita. Maybe we'll find out in a few years. Maybe it'll be 30 years. Who knows?
Yeah, those articles were really, really interesting. But even though the Vita was a really great system and it did a lot of things right, it did things wrong, and really, really wrong. And one of them was the memory storage, because that was, like, awful. I don't know why Sony tried again to do a proprietary storage system or capacity, and especially because it was like really, really expensive. 64 gigabytes was $100, and you had to import it from Japan, because you could find on the US or in America was only 32 gigabytes, and it wasn't enough.
Yeah, I think, you know, that was similar to a point that came up earlier, is that Sony's insistence to kind of keep things, everything in the Sony bubble of all these things that Sony produces, I don't know if that really did them favors in the long run. I think might have hurt them, and I think the storage is an excellent issue. I think the storage really highlights that, and a lot of people kind of said that was kind of BS, and it may have had better luck if it would have adopted a more lenient standard. It was very overpriced. We just had a little thing on the scroll bar that, you know, on the Twitch stream, the little headlines from various sites around the internet that scroll by. I just caught one a little while ago. It said something about 128 gigabyte card or something for like $20. Like, that's, you know, for that, something you can use on Switch. So, I mean, there's that memory's coming down cheap in price, but those
not the Vita cards.
The Vita cards never budged ever.
And they won't get any cheaper because of this. They'll probably get way more expensive. Like, wow, it's going to be, like, really crazy. But another thing that I was really bothered by the Vita, it was the fact that you couldn't only have, like, one account per memory card. So,
yeah,
that's another thing that really, really bothered me, because in my experience, I have Taiko no Tatsujin for the Vita. And you can only get the DLC if you have a Japan account. So obviously my main account is for Mexico, and I had to actually, like, it's a really, really long process. You have to delete your profile on the Vita. You have to remove the memory card, and then do the setup again. It's a really long process just to make a profile change. And instead of, like, having multiple accounts, since it's like, yeah, it's going to be a personal console, it's a portable, but still, it's not like you cannot have multiple accounts on a system like that. It was really baffling.
Yeah, I wonder if that's similar to the whole fact that like you weren't able to change your name on PlayStation Network for the longest time, and even still, I don't think that still is not rolled out, has it? The name change thing?
No,
we're still we know it's going to happen now at this point. It's just a matter of when. So it just seems like maybe some archaic things held it back. Trying to wrap things up on a positive note here, ActF. What was your favorite Vita game and why?
What was my favorite Vita game? I really cannot say at least one game. There were so many. There was this like Cooper Collection. There was Taikono Tatsujin. There were the Project Diva games. There were other games like Tearaway, Gravity Rush. It really had so many great games. And that's the thing that really bothers me with how the Vita was handled, at least in America. Because it really had a lot of potential, and Sony just killed it. Sony themselves could kill the Vita.
At least some of those must-have games did kind of get a second life somewhere else. Like things like Gravity Rush did end up on PlayStation 4 eventually. So at least we got that. But hey, I get it. You're right. It's one of those things where if only Sony had maybe put a little more effort into and money into trying to get the message across about what all the Vita could do, maybe it would have had a better luck. But we'll never know now because it's dead and gone.
Maybe it can have a second chance like the Dreamcast had back in the day.
Maybe. Right? Maybe. Why not? The Dreamcast was ahead of its time, and people. Heck, I've been playing Phantasy Star Online probably more than any other game this week.
I'm still hoping for a Dreamcast Classic Mini at some point.
Yeah, you never know.
I'll jump in on that.
Anything's possible. All right, ActF, I'm going to let you go so we can wrap up. And thanks so much for the call, as always.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks. Take care. All right, that was it for the callers we had on Discord. I will see if we have any quick questions in chat. Most people reacting to the Vita, talking a little bit about that. But quickly, do we have any last-minute stories we want to get to?
No.
No? Nothing?
Nothing.
All right. Anything you're going to try to get done with gaming this week or your programming stuff?
I'm just working on stuff. That's all.
All right.
I don't know what's going to come out of it, but like I know last week was really busy, and this week's probably still going to be busy. I always feel guilty for not playing games, but at the same time, if I'm playing games and I'm not programming, and if I'm not programming, then I'm not putting out a game, and then people are still going to complain that I don't have a game done yet. So you can't win either way.
So for my week, this upcoming week, and if you have any questions, get them out in chat before I wrap up here. For my week this week, I am going to Las Vegas for a few days this week, actually. Not with Alan Gasp, but one of my gal pals, Melody, is taking me. She bought me tickets to see Gwen Stefani at the residency there for my birthday, which was back in June. But obviously, they announced those residencies way in advance. So I will be in Vegas for a few days. And nice. I'm hoping maybe to check out a few arcades. And finally, I keep meaning to go by there every time I'm in Vegas. But I know Melody's into this stuff, too. So we might finally get over and check out that pinball museum that they have.
Yes,
there.
I saw the pinball museum in Jack Black's Jablinski Games video. He went there in Vegas and it looked pretty cool. So they've got some cool stuff there. But yeah.
She-Hulk is asking, has Loki seen FP2 Beats of Rage?
I have not yet.
I haven't either.
Haven't seen FP1, to be honest. I have the disc for it somewhere, but I haven't watched it yet. But I should watch the second one, too.
All right.
I think it's on Netflix, or one of them was on Netflix at one time. The first one, I think. But I just haven't gotten around to it.
The other thing I'm really excited for in Vegas, the food. Because Vegas got some good restaurants. Mm-hmm. So guess where we have a reservation over the weekend. We're going to go to the Hell's Kitchen restaurant because they built like a mock, like the TV show.
They built
an actual restaurant at Caesar's Palace. And you have to get reservations a few weeks out and all stuff. So we're actually going there.
But did they show stuff there?
Like, no, it's not like the actual TV show. But my understanding is they do have a kitchen with a blue team and a red team. Risotto is on the menu.
But is it cooked shit each time?
Hopefully not. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if they put on a show where we watch the chefs get screamed at or whatever. But I'm really excited to try that because I saw the building when I was there in November because I went to Final Fantasy Fan Fest. And I saw the building and it's got the big flaming thing, everything that you see on the TV show.
That's awesome.
Rebuilt because I think it is a Gordon Ramsay restaurant because he has several of those places in Vegas. And so that's, no different. So I think that'll be a lot of fun. So I'm excited. I love the food. Pixel Pacas in chat says you gotta hit a buffet. Well, that would be something I wouldn't mind doing. We'll see how that goes. That all just depends. So anyway, Loki, you need to entertain the listeners for a bit while I figure out what's going on here.
Yes. So, yeah, this week I'm probably just going to be programming, or I'm going to try to program, maybe. I've been trying to find out, like, I started one project, which I guess I could talk about it a little bit. So I started a project, which I'm probably not going to end up working on anymore, but it was originally like a terminal emulator type thing, but I mean, it looked like a terminal, but it was going to be kind of like a text adventure game type of thing. That was mocked up like a Vogue Network bulletin board system, but I ended up not doing that because it was what I was using was limited to what I could do, and I wanted to get it done quickly, and this is not something that would be done quickly, and I, like everything else I do, overscoped the crap out of it, so I decided that I am just not going to do that, not going to work on it, going to work on something that I can get done quicker. Although the project I'm working on now is not really going to get done any quicker either. It's going to take even longer, but it's more entertaining, I should say. So I decided to go that route instead. But who knows where I'll end up. I'll probably start several different projects and not finish anything as usual.
Okay. Whew. Wow. A lot just happened there. So that was – somebody was at our door, right? That's
right.
Why I had to go. Like, nobody ever rings the door on a Sunday night. It was Uber Eats. And they did have this address, so if you wanted Burger King, I guess I could have grabbed it, because somebody went to the – but here's the scary part, because I had the door open for it, Mr. Smush ran outside. So that's the first time that's happened. So, yeah, very scary. He started to go in the little plant over here. I'm like, no, 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 and I was able to pick him up in time, thankfully, but that's scary. So he went on an adventure today. Anyway, hopefully she's able to call and get the right address for – because I was like, can't you call whoever put it in and – get the right place. All right.
Yeah.
I guess I could have just taken the food, huh?
No.
But that's not nice. That's not the right thing to do. Yeah, yikes. Very true. Smush save. Stay inside, Smush. Luckily, Alan was behind me and heard it happening, and I was like, oh, shit. So, anyway, whew, that was scary. Anyway, I guess we will wrap up then. That's now that I've had a heart attack, we can wrap up the show. All right. So as we say at the end of every show, thank you guys so much for downloading our show, checking out the show. We appreciate you guys being here every week. All we ask, tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. But we can only, you know, put those voices out there if they're here. So thank you guys so much for all the kind tweets. I will say, here on Twitch TV, putting us on your hosting list, your auto host list, that helps tremendously as well. We would really appreciate those. And of course, we always appreciate all the bits and subscribers. I'll read some of those after the show is all done tonight here at Vogue Network. So stay tuned after the credits live on Twitch. Otherwise, I think we can wrap up and get everybody's final thoughts. Loki, your final thought tonight.
My final thought, like I mentioned, I'll try to work on programming and maybe play a game. Maybe stream. I may do some streaming too if I ever get some time.
Yeah, my final thought is, if I am able to do it before I leave for Vegas, I want to freaking do a stream of Super Mario Brothers U already on Switch, which I keep saving to start. I haven't opened the damn thing in like 2 or 3 weeks because I keep meaning to stream it, but I keep getting pulled into Phantasy Star Online. But can I really complain? Because playing video games like it's 2000 all over again is still an awful lot of fun. So I think that is going to do it for another. Whoa!
Oh, no.
Everything's broken tonight. I'm going to wrap up the show. We're done. We're out of here before something else breaks. Have a safe week, everybody. We'll see you here next time on Orange Lounge Radio. Good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vogue Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.